Wish to welcome the department that are here. We are happy to have the presentation with you. Our first after the
My name is Madebona Precious Matsiko. It's been a half week. I represent myself. I'm also with the Department of Health Team, the FCFO, Cameroon, and our parliamentary officer.
Good morning, it's from the Provincial Budget Unit of the National Treasury.
Good morning, my name is Selma Kumar from National Treasury. Division IGR on the municipal monitoring.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Paul Sorote, Corporate Executive Officer General. I'm with the respective portfolio head for help for Lane Viber, accompanied with and then for Department of Sports and Recreation, the portfolio head, Musa Songwa, accompanied by Andrula, Litra Gomez, and for COPTA, I have the portfolio head, Lawrence Van Veer. Thank you.
All right, comrades, may we introduce ourselves? We'll start here with the advocate. I'm Ishmael Malale, member of the committee.
Sarama is a member of this committee.
Tovel, Stamra Watavijani, the local committee.
Naren Singh, member of SCOPA.
Pete Pretorius, member of SCOPA.
Lauren Mashiani, member of SCOPA.
Roy Ainsley, member of this committee.
Tapelo Chiluan, member of the committee.
Mandla Mbili.
Thank you very much, comrades. Comrade Temba Goti, I chair this committee. I think that the issues of concern that they have brought us here are quite simple and straightforward. It is a challenge that has been there for some time, and we feel that we do need to engage and try to see where the gaps are and how this can be closed. But the key issue really being that as national departments, you give conditional grants for which there has to be accountability. And the persistent sense we're getting from the Auditor General's report is that that accountability is not satisfactory. And as a committee, we feel it is not an issue we could just allow, you know, to persist into the future without saying how do we arrest it to ensure that whatever resources that Parliament appropriates for your department, they can be fully accounted for, and that indeed they serve the purpose for which they are intended. Now, in the absence of proper accounting mechanism, and in the absence of proper accounting, it creates a problem, and I think it's a point of concern for us. That's why we had an engagement with National Treasury, I think 2 weeks ago, try and have an understanding of exactly what is transpiring in terms of the broad and general principles governing conditional grants. And then we felt that we needed to engage with you around this matter so that we can together seek to find a solution to this challenge. But I'll hand over to Comrade Malale to kickstart our process. Comrade.
I'll be dealing with the Department of Health. I just want to confirm that you're actually responsible for 14 billion in terms of the cultural grants that you give to provinces. I think the Auditor General has observed that there have been odd concerns or findings for a number of years that were not being really dealt with by the department. Just help the members of the committee as to what are the problems or challenges that cause you not to be able to respond to the concerns that have been raised by the AG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. First, I would just like to give an outline of these grants and our analysis of the problem and the approach on how we hope to address the problems. The first grant is the grant on HIV/AIDS, which is aimed at addressing the effective response to HIV/AIDS and to support the implementation of the plan. But also, more lately, because of the policy of government to treat, to provide a treatment, as you know that drugs are fairly expensive and the costs are going to escalate as we treat more people. But this is going to be enhanced with the current campaign of trying to test more people. But I think the approach that government as a whole would take and led by the Department of Health is that of strengthening our preventative strategies so that we ensure that those who are negative remain negative. And then we can then have resources to treat others. So the grant as it is allocated to provinces. There is some spending. But because it makes use of the community health workers largely in its preventative strategies, but also home-based care to help those who are terminally ill to be cared for appropriately. We have taken the view that we need to strengthen our primary health care so that we can use this resource in our preventative strategies. And I think this plan is underway, and we're finding and seeking solutions to integrate. But in a way that we can assist provinces to make good use of resources.
Let's do this, DG. You said you have a number of grants. The first one is the HIV grant.
Yes.
And the second one?
The second one is the forensic pathology. This one is aimed at supporting the criminal justice system and mortuary services in all provinces. It was aimed at ensuring that the mortuary services were productive and that they met certain operational standards. But this is one of the grants where there's really failure and poor performance. And I think this is one particular area that we're working with the criminal justice system as well as police to see whether we can work on a cost recovery basis to ensure that we have enough and adequate personnel. Because there's a backlog, and this backlog is of great concern to us, because it's undermining the criminal justice system. The third is the Health Professions Training and Development Grant. And this particular grant is about training of health professionals. Initially, it was targeted at a few provinces, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Eastern Cape, Northwest, and Northern Cape. But the way the grant has been historically handled is that the allocations have been given to all provinces. And I think it's inappropriate, and we're looking at how best we can address this. Because firstly, because it was aimed at strengthening the capacity of these provinces so that we can ensure that we have medical personnel specialists who are trained but also who can provide services in these specific provinces, this has not happened. So we are looking at how best we can integrate with higher education. We're jointly working with higher education to look at the best way on how we can train health personnel and not use the grant specifically in this way and find other means. It has been expanded also to use for training of nurses. The fourth one is tertiary grant. This one is for tertiary institutions.
and it was meant to provide for a delivery plan in the academic health complexes. And the basis on which we measure performance is that it should, there must be service level agreements. The last one is the hospital revitalization project. I need to say that this is one grant where there's been consistent underspending over a number of years. We just finished an analysis, a four-year analysis, to look at the patterns, the spending patterns, particularly for this grant, from 2006 to 2007 up to 2009, 2010, to look at exactly what the problems are. So we have come up with an approach where we'd like to set up.
Can we have a copy of that analysis? Not here and now, but maybe at the end.
So our view is that there are a few provinces that have a consistent understanding, and there are a few that have other peculiar problems. So we've just set up a provincial support programs, because our view is that the problem is not just to the hospital revitalization. The problem is also with all funding that is associated with infrastructure. We've picked up that there is going to be an underspend, and we've come up with a proposal with Treasury. We've had a meeting with Treasury on how we can avoid the underspend and how we can reorganize the program and the project.
All right.
Let's check this. According to our report, you don't have adequate staff to coordinate reports from the provinces. Why? $14 billion.
It's a huge amount, yes. There's misallocation of resources in terms of the nature of and quality and the skills of people that are appointed. The current arrangement is that there are more administrative and management staff. Actually, it's a pattern across national and provinces. And we're trying to redirect that to ensure that we have appropriate staffing. But we've just started a project that is funded by DFID, where we're revamping the whole, overhauling the whole healthcare system. We're analyzing the capacity of our hospital managers in every province. And we're hoping to get a report soon.
Just give us an idea. When do you think you would have sorted out this problem of staffing? Was really, as Parliament, were concerned that we could really have $14 billion that is being utilized in provinces, but there's no proper accountability because it is now put into the primary account. It generates, profit. In terms of interest, and that money we don't know what it's been used for.
We're doing it in phases. The first phase, we've just started the restructuring in national health. In terms of the team we have a management, senior management of about 150 personnel. And our plan is to deploy most of them to provinces to assist the provincial offices as well as some of the hospitals that are struggling. We've categorized hospitals into four groups.
When was this misallocation of personnel realized?
Well, it's a report that we've just compiled in the last 2 months, where we did an analysis to look at the types of personnel we have. We've got three reports that have been produced. The first is the integrated support team that has actually identified that over the last 16 years we've employed more administrative and managerial staff. And not technical stuff.
Well, I think the question tries to go down and not look at the broad, although that might have an impact, but specifically on the monitoring of conditional grants.
The one on conditional grants, we've just started, like I said, in the last few months. The first area that we're focusing on is that we've recognized that the hospital revitalization involves a lot of money, and we've not had engineers, we've not had architects. the provincial support committee that I spoke about, that we have established, is led by an official who's worked jointly with Treasury, who are actually going through every province to address this problem. So these are structures that have just been created.
All right. Okay. In terms of, you see, you've got a plan that you're supposed to follow. Quarterly visits to provinces, receiving quarterly reports, and fiscal inspections. And we understand that that is what's actually happening now.
Yes, we've just started.
Why was it not done all along? And yet that was part of the conditions for the grant.
Well, I guess that it was an oversight which is regretted. It should not have happened.
Okay, let's go to information. I mean, the AG complains that you are not able to verify source documents in terms of the reports that you generate, on a quarterly basis, and ultimately the reports that you give to them. When they do their own investigations, they notice that there are many errors in terms of the quality of the information that you provide. Why that?
Yes, like I said, it's the historical approach to how these grants are managed has not been good, and we've just set up those systems in place. Hence, we started with the conditional grants. We have this analysis that we've just finished. We have a plan. We met with Treasury. We're going to implement that.
DORA requires you to submit, for the province to submit business plans. It's a legal requirement. And we are noticing that there are late submissions of this report. Why? Because I don't think you can give money when there's no business plan. Money goes out. There's no plan. The plan comes very late. Why do you put money?
Yes, indeed, there are delays which we recognize, and we are in consultation with our provincial counterparts because this is where the delays are. But we are finding mechanisms by which we can facilitate their approval process, because as you notice, the CFOs sign up, and the HODs, as accounting officers, also have to sign. And we're trying to find a way to fast-track that process. It is a concern indeed.
The way has not yet been found. You're still in the process.
Yes, in particular to get our HODs to sign on time.
One thing that Parliament wants to make very, very clear to the Department is that we need business plans to be ready and to be submitted before money is given out. You can't give money without a plan. We can't. That, we are saying, must happen. Now, one thing that I would like to hear is, what are the mechanisms, besides the committees that you mentioned, administrative mechanisms to facilitate monitoring, accountability for the funds? Practical systems.
We have a forum of CFOs which meets on monthly basis. And what we've done a report for each province, and we're looking at two specific areas: cost drivers and budget pressures. And in terms of those two specific areas, we've got an implementation plan for each province.
Is that a new structure, or it has been there all along?
Well, it has been created a few months ago, but the reports and the implementation plans are underway. As I speak now, the team is in Gauteng today working on the development of the plan, because we've recognized that it's not enough just to work it with HODs and so on. We need our financial officers to also work. And part of that, we've also included a plan to build capacity in the provincial departments that deal with finance, because it will not help if we just work through committee structures without building capacity in the provincial finance office and department.
Let's now go to data integrity. Do you have systems, information systems, that interface with the provincial systems to know really this is proper information about our health issues in South Africa?
Our information systems, I must confess, are a challenge. But I also need to hasten to say that the district health information system is a backbone of any health information system. And the current system that we have is paper-based, and we're looking at how best we can migrate that to an electronic system where there can be data interchange.
That we have is that the district information system is not really having accurate data. That is our concern, actually. How are we going to deal with that?
On the financial side, we do get the reports that we at least verify with the treasury, so that there can be some system of verification. But for the other...
Treasury, they know. They depend on you to provide information. So we cannot really expect them to have any way of getting very thorough information. That must be from the department.
Mm-hmm.
And that is our concern. And I think, I'm sure my colleagues will follow on that. The information that I would like to hear from you is this money goes into the primary provincial account. Mm-hmm. It's thrown into this big account. Don't you find a problem with that?
Well, the equitable share formula, I mean...
No, it's fine. Here's Parliament. We want to understand the intricacies involved in having this money that is meant for a specific project being thrown into the general account. I mean, it could end up paying salaries or paying a different project, not the one that it is determined for.
It's true. It's true that it's a concern. And what we have discussed with the provincial and what gives us hope is that with the service delivery agreement, we have specific outcomes, and we are negotiating at the moment that we should be signing the service delivery agreements with our provincial counterparts to agree that those funds that have been allocated specifically to meet these specific targets should not be reallocated or diverted elsewhere. It is what we are committing to as a collective, both ourselves, through the National Health Council, which is a statutory body, and the Technical National Health Council, which is meant to do technical support to this.
Yes. You see, what we are saying indirectly is that as Parliament, we feel Parliament is being undermined. You see, the monies that are meant for particular projects must be spent on those projects. Parliament determines an act and says this billion is for AIDS. And then the money goes to provinces and then officials, because they don't think this is an act of Parliament. They use the money for anything else.
DORA does allow for mechanisms to withhold money or to reallocate.
That doesn't happen. You see, you are talking to Parliament, that has information. We just want to confirm with you that that is not happening.
Mm.
And that is our concern. What is going to happen to make sure that we as Parliament are assured that the billions that are being spent are spent on proper projects?
Are you done, comrade?
Yeah.
All right. I would leave that one for last, because it's a broad question, and that is why they're here, to give us the assurance that indeed monies that are appropriated for particular purposes are useful.
we're not that sure. That's why we want this engagement. So
let me check. I'll start in KZN and here in Mpumalanga.
Thank you, Chair. KZN are flanking this side with Comrade Mbili on that side and myself. But thank you very much. Thank you to the DG for the responses. Chair, I just want to ask some general questions first. I think it might apply to all departments, to emphasize some of the points that colleague Malala has made. Firstly, I think we need from all the departments that here health at some time a written document which sets out the systems for monitoring and evaluation and the capacity within each of those departments to monitor and evaluate these conditional grants. So we have it in writing, and we have something to check the next time we call you here and we ask whether you've been doing exactly what you've said. You see, a general point, Jay, is, you know, South Africa is flush with money. The fiscus has got the money. Tax collection is excellent. But it is a sad, unhealthy state of affairs when money is not spent where it should be spent. We know about service delivery protests. We know about people going to hospitals. Conditions are terrible. And yet hospital revitalization grant is not spent. Let's allow 10 years for our democracy as a learning curve. We're 16 years into our democracy. 10 years we were learning. But in the last 6 years, what's happened? The next question, Chairperson, is to all these departments. Have any grants been stopped?
Let's do this. I would want health specific. I'll give you the slot later on, but I would want matters that flow from that are specific to health. At a more broad level, you can talk later.
Thanks. Chair, I just want to throw you to the DG of Health. Do you have a list here, or can you tell us if any grants have been withheld? And if so, why they were withheld and what happened to those grants? Because National Treasury tells us that grants can be withheld and transferred to another province, as has happened, or for another project. Have any grants been withheld? And then, Chairperson, I think here we need the AG's office and the person responsible for grants, monitoring grants, to also give us their impression and pick up on anything within health that they've seen. The DG of Health, Chair, has told us about some interventions. Have there been specific interventions by the National Department in provinces to assist them with capacity issues and other issues? Because the National Treasury also told us in a report that was given to us that expenditure reporting on conditional grants signed off by provincial CFOs is at times inaccurate and of poor quality. I mean, that's something that we picked up from National Treasury. Are you finding this, and what do you do in that instance? Thank you, Chair.
Well, the last question need not be answered. That's why we're here. Because there are those inaccuracies. Yeah. Can you respond to his question then now?
Okay. Thank you very much. Indeed, on the MNE, we've just started a process of building an MNE system for the whole health.
What is MNE?
Monitoring and evaluation.
Oh, okay.
My apologies. The issue about the grants that have been withheld, I'm not aware of any, but what we have now with this analysis that we've done, we've got a report per province where we have a proposal and a discussion that we have with Treasury that we'd like to recommend that they do not, they reallocate. Would like Treasury to consider provisions 16, I think it's 16 and 17 or 17 or 18 of DORA to consider reallocating elsewhere, but we're in discussion. But our view, because there is an allowance, we do not want any project to be disrupted. We would like, because we've started a planning approach where the each project has to have a project management plan from phase one up to the last end. So we've costed that, and we have a breakdown, and I have those reports to show you what is it that we're doing. But that is just for hospital revitalization. But we've recognized that it is not just for the grants, but it's also for other projects. Clinic building, the building of nursing colleges and so on, and accommodation, so which may not necessarily fall within the grant, but broader projects. So we're helping provinces even with projects beyond just the revitalization grant. So we hope that we'll be able to make that report available for you on where we are and so on. It's quite detailed. With regard to capacity, we've actually requested that the provinces should ensure, because remember, it is not just about the erection of a structure. We have to ensure that for each hospital or clinic that's built, there's equipment, but there's also adequate staffing. But what has happened is that that kind of planning approach has not been in place. So we're having that integrated approach where it's the building, it's equipment.
Okay.
Now, that is sort of the integrated approach that we're following.
Okay. Pretoria?
Thank you, Chair. I have two questions. One is a general one and the one more specific. I just want to...
Can we deal with the specific one, the more general one, let's deal with it later.
Well, it's general specific. I think it's related to the current situation.
All right.
Can I just get 100% clarity from the DG about the change of heart or change of view of the department in terms of monitoring the grant? Because the AG reported to us for the financial year which ended March 2009, that the department does not consider its role to include detailed monitoring of the grant. Are you now saying to us, have you said now that this is something of the past, of your future reports would have detailed reporting and information on your monitoring of the grants? Is that
yes, indeed.
And my second question, Chair, relates...
Just a minute. What led to that change?
There's recognition that with the hospital revitalization, because we're using that as a guide, that we could avoid wastage. Two, we could also avoid failed projects, because some projects are not completed.
So we had failed projects and wastage because of the attitude of the department before?
Historically, well, I would argue that was the case, and we're trying to address that as best as we can.
Well, my second question actually relates to the first one, so it's actually question 1B, not my real second question. That would be, or rather let me get to the other question first of all. It relates to the hospital revitalization program. On page 191 of the report, I don't know whether you have copies of the report, but there are two provinces who underspent with hospital revitalization, Free State and Northern Cape. And in both cases, the reasons given for that was insufficient cash to process payments. Now, just explain to me, how is it that you underspend and then the reason for that is insufficient cash? I'm not quite sure how to bring it to the end.
There's been a cash flow management problem in the provinces. So we set up a system to help them with the management of cash flow. But like I said, you've cited two. As in this, just in the past 3 months, for the hospital revite money, we've just calculated that the spending pattern at the moment is 8.5%, and that is quite low in relation to the expectations. And because we are very worried that we may not spend the whole money, we're actually helping the provinces with cash flow management, but also with a plan on how to, like I said, we've started that project. We now know that at this point in time, as of end of May, our reports are that we're at 8.5% and it shouldn't be.
All right. Yes, Mashiyam.
I don't know when health is going to get its act together, because especially on matters of DORA, the same issues continue to come up. I'm not really convinced on the response on the issue of the business plan, because I think that linked to non-delivery in terms of projects, they would assist in terms of exactly putting finger on the pulse of what is actually happening in provinces. And I think we're going to be sitting with this problem for quite some time if there isn't,
real action taking place in terms of maybe at some stage the DG herself doing rounds in provinces to understand exactly what is happening. That's just an issue on business plans. But my issue is on hospital revitalization program. To me, it tends to be an intellectual exercise. Nothing is really coming out of it. For us, it's a political matter, as people are dying daily. And it doesn't look like there is enough personnel or skills out there. And I don't understand why health does not go out and look for skills. You've got the money, you've got 14 billion or even more than that per annum, but really nothing is not coming out of it. What is the actual problem? Unfortunately, I'm asking your question to somebody that is relatively new in the department, but I think you've got some sense of what the problem is. Just give us a clue on exactly what is the issue here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think there are three levels. From this analysis, like I said, that we've done. The first is that correctly put by the honourable member, there's lack of skills. But it's not that there are no skills in the country. There are skills, but there hasn't been a conscious approach to sourcing those skills. We cannot run such huge hospital projects without engineers, for instance. But in addition to the engineers, because those are for structural arrangements and the building and architects also. The second skill that we need is clinical engineers. Because when we source equipment, because this is where the other wastage has been identified, clinical engineers are quite useful in ensuring that we buy the correct equipment that is needed by a particular hospital that can be maintained. Now, we've picked up that even the maintenance of equipment, we buy equipment, we don't maintain it, and so on. So this is why I say we've taken a comprehensive approach to hospital revive, not just for hospitals only, but even for clinics, to say that we'd like to ensure that a hospital, as it's built, it also has appropriate equipment that can be maintained. Because there's another problem with the poor maintenance of some of the facilities. It's a costly issue because in some of the provinces in this analysis, instead of us having a repair with an engineer who can pay it at an affordable salary, because we also have a breakdown of salaries of what an engineer costs, an architect, and so on. We have that, and we can share that with you. Our view is that for some provinces, they've opted out for outsourcing, which has been at a cost of 8 times what it would cost them if they just had appropriate skills on site to do the work. So this is why I say in this short period, we've done that analysis and we're trying to solve that problem and implement some of the proposals that we have.
Okay. All right. A quick one. Yeah.
Follow up on the issue of the engineers, especially the structural, because I think another problem is we don't have enough hospitals. Isn't it possible for you to go out? I know it's going to be expensive, but you've got the money. Go out into the private sector, get these people in for a particular period of time, and then get them out when the work is done. Is it difficult to do that?
Yes, it's one option that we follow, and it's worth considering. Thank you, Honourable.
Shalana?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm also going back to the business plans. In terms of the report by the AG, is that performance reports and monthly financial reports from provinces were in some instances not submitted or submitted late for approval. We just want to check which are those provinces who didn't submit their reports or their performance reports, and also how much was allocated to those particular provinces, and what are the remedies that have been put in place by the department to sort out this challenge. That's my first question.
Yes, Honourable Member, I do have the figures, if you allow me to just get the figures. Is that permissible? To just, because I have the report per province as to which ones were late and by how many days. Some are 2 days, others are 1 month, others are 6 weeks. So it differs from one province to the other and it's not consistent. For the hospital revitalization specifically, Eastern Cape, for the first quarter, the due date of submission was 15th July, or stated July, they submitted 15th July, so they were quite early. So for that period, for the second quarter, Eastern Cape also, the due date was 30th of October, they submitted the 15th. For the third quarter, again, they were compliant, they submitted on time, and even for the last quarter. Gauteng, there were problems with Gauteng in that in the first quarter, the due date was in the third quarter was 30th January and they submitted early. So all provinces have complied only in submitting these reports. But there are instances, for instance, in KZN, where KZN experienced some challenges with their ITS system. Both the financial and non-financial report were received after the 15th of October. On quarterly basis, the National and Provincial Revitalization Project, there's a process by which managers meet and discuss progress with regard to the submission of various reports by each of the provinces. So we're trying to ensure that we can help them to comply and to submit on time. But I also think that it's not just about submission. We also want to ensure that they meet the purpose for which they've been established. I think it's 2-1.
Okay. Is there one question?
Yeah. Chairperson, thank you. The monitoring that is performed by the department, it was one matter that was signed by the AG that was ineffective due to some problems that were raised by the AG when he was busy with your financial reports. There were some inconsistencies in the information supplied in monthly financial and quarterly performance reports by the provincial department to the department, which has made difficult for the department to consolidate its report in time and properly. And that is one factor also that is hampering the process of handling these DORA funds. We just want to know as a committee, how does the department going to rectify this happening from now onwards? Because it has been a problem for the department for the past financial years.
We have two levels at which we would like to intervene, and we're in consultation with our colleagues in the provinces. One is that we have data capturers that would like to employ who ensure that we capture accurate data at provincial level. And this will do through donor funding. The second one is that at national level, we also want to ensure that there's capacity to analyze the data that we'll be receiving, because it will not just be enough to collect the data and we don't have a system to analyze that. But like I said, we would like to migrate from a paper-based system to an electronic system. Our difficulty is that for the amount of money we spend just on IT, there hasn't been a good product that gives us good information. So there are two provinces actually that have reasonable systems, and that is Western Cape and Free State. know, trying to see how best we can bring other provinces up to speed. But whilst we're doing that, we'd like to see whether we can have at least credible information that can help us report accurately.
Khosh.
On the grounds you said, forensic pathology, you have been, you know, having this challenge for quite some time. And the same statement, you repeated it on hospital revitalization. However, Chair, you then come back and said, only 2 months down the line, you did analysis of this particular challenge that you are confronted with. My question, Chair, is to say, realizing that the report we are discussing about it, it was the report of 2008 and 2009. What takes them such long time if they've said these two grants recurred from previous reports? What makes them just now to come on board while they've seen it, you know, for the past more than one financial year? That's the first question, Chair. The last one is, do you have an official who you have employed, this particular official, specifically to deal with this particular issue? If you have this official, can you tell us what competency do you see in this official? And then that cannot only just be a measure of the competence. You must tell us, how did you correct the anomaly that are caused by this particular office? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Like I said, the basis of our analysis is based on diagnostic work that was done. I refer to the ICT report. As you know, in any analytical work that's done, it's always important to recognize the honorable member that reports are produced and nothing happens. So what we've done is to take these reports where there were clear recommendations of what the problem is and what the solution should be. And we use that as a basis of coming up with a plan. But we also went further to identify the appropriate skills specifically to help us. The first one was with the hospital revitalization. So there's actually a well-experienced engineer that is helping us to build capacity in the province. The second one...
Sir, I'm sure this explanation, I got it. I'm saying what takes them that long before they can get worried like we are worried? Why continuous, you know, reports year after year that this area is making us, you know, difficult? This area is difficult for us. But only now, even now when we're talking, after the financial report that we're talking about, they've, you know, gone beyond a year and couple months before they can say, let's see what is wrong. Because if you are saying just 2 months down the line from where we are, it means 12 months pass and you go and even beyond, I'm sure, 2-3 months again. I wanted to know, why was they lulling all along? Why laissez-faire in the department when things are not going well?
Yes, I agree. The response is regrettable. It should have been earlier, Honorable Member, but I also need to say that in recognition of the problem, I think the department is responding, and if it's acceptable to you, is responding adequately. However, I wanted to go back to the specific questions you raised about the forensic, and part of the reason I'm going back to the revite is because we're using that as an example, as a measure of success, to use that for management of other grants. And in that experience, it's going to help us to actually improve how best we manage grants. The second area is that we have a CFO forum. Now these are CFOs of different provinces who work with our acting CFOs, and there's a collective process, but I also think that it's not just CFOs by themselves. They also have some bilateral arrangements with Treasury. We started a process of having joint meeting where both Health and Treasury sit together, because there's recognition that there's a certain level of mismanagement that you've so correctly identified, and in recognition of that, this MINMEC has a grand plan. We have a plan. We have a draft resolution that will be signed by both MECs in Health, MECs in Finance, and both ministers, and that will ensure that officials commit to that. And we're hoping that this can be shared with you as soon as it's signed.
Official chair, who
monitors
and
manages?
Where we are paying him or her for this work?
Chair, if you allow me, I said in my opening remarks that the Department of Health National has 150 officials. And unfortunately, the grants that you refer to are distributed all over the place. And if you allow me, I'd like to have an opportunity to restructure to address this particular problem you're referring to. Given a chance, I'll deal with it and I'll report. But for now, we've got different officials dealing with different grants. That's why we have this problem. But we're in a process of restructuring to integrate all these grants so that we can best manage them. But for now, we have a process by which we are dealing with the hospital revitalization. We're using that as an example. That is going to help us to reintegrate back all these grants under one roof and ensure that we can achieve some efficiency gains.
Chair, to me, I understand that she's saying, in a nicer word, there's been a lot of negligence, derelictions, and all this, but she doesn't want to say what happened, because we're not saying, no, we're planning to have this revitalization good. We're saying they've been bad. How do you deal with the person who have, you know, mismanaged, who failed? Deal with them, because we have got a tool. You know PFMA. It is empowered you to say, Abraham, when this person you have employed, you are giving the salary, and this person doesn't perform, deal with this person. Do you use this particular document?
Yes, indeed. PFMA and the Public Service Act will be enforced accordingly
okay.
At the appropriate time.
All right, let's move. Memanga.
Chairperson. It's saying that, or the DG, the DG,
yeah.
The Director General, says that they had a business plan. I know some years back, I was in that committee. My worry is that they proposed that they wanted three provinces where nurses were going to be trained. Only three provinces. But ultimately, they ended up having 9 provinces. I don't say they shouldn't train those poor kids I know in other provinces also. I believe here we're talking about those poor children. Others were trained for 1 year, others were trained for 4 years, and they were to be professional nurses, those ones. But you said there were supposed to be 3 provinces where this training was to take place, but you ended up training 9. Who is this person who made faultly that money is taken to the other 6 provinces? Because by doing that, the other provinces were going to suffer, the other 3 were going to suffer. That's why we're having problems now. I don't say those children in those other provinces were not supposed to be trained, but if they sat down and said, okay, in KZN, we have got about 20 children whom we would like to send to Limpopo, okay? Maybe Johannesburg, Gauteng province like that. Not from Cape, just like that. Distributing them among the 3 provinces. I don't think really we would be having a problem now saying that we don't know how this grant was used. And when we know very well that When we asked that money from Treasury, we said we're going to use it on three provinces. But there's someone who made a mistake by allocating the money to all the provinces. Maybe that person was saying, no, my province cannot really be left alone. It should also be given money for training these kids. And that person really made a mistake. What is it that was done with such a person?
Honorable member, if I were to just refer back to my initial input, to say that it's actually Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Eastern Cape, Northwest, and Northern Cape, so it's five. So it means out of nine, the allocation has been extended to four other provinces. But correctly so, it's still, the principle remains that it has gone beyond five to include four others that should not have been included on the basis of the purpose of this grant. We were reviewing this and we'll rectify this problem. But of course, like what the other honorable member said, we'll obviously have to follow the course of the law and enforce some measures to ensure that corrective action is taken.
Okay. I want us to move to Doris, I want us to move to the next department. Yeah, okay. One.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. Just a question about your certainty that the funds that were transferred from your department to the provinces were actually used for the purpose intended. In the annual report, the DG at the time then said that based on the reports received from the provinces, the allocations achieved the purpose and outputs outlined in the Act. This is totally in conflict with what the Auditor General says. Auditor General says the department did not always adhere to the framework, the monitoring was inadequate, monitoring performed was ineffective and inconsistent, etc. Now my question is, surely it must be possible then for provinces to not use the money for the purpose intended. Do you agree with that, for example, money transferred for hospital revitalization or for national tertiary grant could have been used in certain provinces for purposes not intended in terms of the grant, even for things like soccer tickets?
For the revitalization grant, I've already said that we have a plan, and we've also done an analysis based on that. For the health professions training and development grant, I think that one is unique. This particular problem applies specifically to this issue, and I've raised it already, and I've explained that it should have been limited to five provinces, and it was extended that it shouldn't.
My question really is it possible that money could have been abused or misused in provinces without you knowing about it?
Well, with the weak monitoring and evaluation system that I referred to earlier, I cannot exclude that. And in our discussion with the Auditor General, I think we've sort of recognized that it's a definite weakness that we'd like to address and rectify, and we'd like to put systems in place to ensure that does not happen.
All right.
I just conclude then by saying that I think it's important for us as a committee to get, from now onwards, where the new page has been turned over by the department, to get continuous or regular reports on how the monitoring goes from now onwards, because we're getting promises from all DGs that things have changed and next year around will be different, but we've seen the opposite so far. The only way to counter that is for us to have reports to make sure that we are on the right track.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you very much, comrades. But before we jump to the next department, I do want to say, DJ, that it's important to recognize that this issue of conditional grants in the department is not new. It has been there for many, many years. And I do remember that in the state parliament, we actually called all the HODs of health together with the national department here to parliament to talk about this issue of conditional grants. And that many years later, we're here still talking about the same issue.
isn't itself an indication that we've not been able to make progress. And whilst accepting the good intentions and programs that you're having, you have been in the department for 6 weeks, but the department has been there all along. And it can't be that every time there's a new DG, we're starting from zero. There's a restructuring, there's a recognition of allocation of personnel or programs, this and that. It does not assist us. Because early in the year, the same departmental officials, or the officials from the same department you're heading, were sitting here, right here, making all sorts of commitments about a whole range of things when we're having a hearing on the annual report. And when I look, the person who was actually leading the delegation is not there. And understand, actually left 2 weeks after making commitments to us about what is going to be done to change the department. And you are here. So we're starting from scratch. There are plans, new structures, new systems, and all that. I think that is a challenge. That might not only be limited to the department, but I'm just trying to say the problem is long-standing. I know that at some point, National Treasury actually gave extra money to the Department of Health to be able to employ people to do this physical inspection. See, so if here and now I see that there is a capacity constraint, and yet there was special fund provided to the department by National Treasury to address that very question, it basically says we're not making any progress. We're just moving in cycles. And I think the key issue, DG, that I think needs to be captured is that, you see, our main concern here is accountability for money that goes to the provinces. The issue here is accountability. You give money, how do people account back to you? And I would have loved that, you had kept it at a broad and generic level rather than to reduce it to a discussion on hospital budget revitalization cut. It's fine if that is what is there. But you see what it means if this will be used, for purpose of dealing with the other grants. What it says to us is that, as of now, for all the other grants, there is no program to address the inadequacies. We are waiting on the hospital revitalization grant to be properly managed and to learn the appropriate lessons and then go to the other grants. So which means it's open season as far as the other grants are concerned. And to us, that is unacceptable. The issue is the quality and timeliness of reports. Of all the grants, from forensic pathology, HIV, this, that, all of them, our main concern is the quality and the timeliness of the report. And any intervention or response must talk to the totality of these grants in relation to this. Unless if there is one that is not, but conditional grants, in my understanding, means it's a grant that is conditioned. And the question is, are these conditions being met? And my understanding so far is that for all these years, these conditions have not been satisfactorily met. And the question is, what is it that is being done to ensure that these conditions are met? I think in all these other years, when we're talking to the accounting officer, the main grant we're talking about was this HIV. It was the main grant of the department to say, we can't stop this grant because people will die. So in that way, we pull back. Now, here we're talking about hospital revitalization grant. Fine. There is progress that is being made. But I'm just saying, we're talking to the totality. That's why they kept on going back on the business plan. Because that is what is supposed to determine how the grants are given. But in the past, we know that millions have been given out without those business plans being done. So I'm trying to say our problem is accountability once money is given out. In the time, yes, yeah, I hear you, Shulam.
in a timeous and qualitative way. That gives us the satisfaction that you can be certain that money has been used for what it has been given. I think that's where we should have rotated. The other information is fine. It assists us to understand things better. But here, our main concern is money, how money is used. Whatever the policy can change, that's for the portfolio committee. It can change, it can go anywhere. But once money is allocated, can it be accounted for? And the question that Comrade Tobijan asked is very pertinent. I mean, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 grants. So if there's accountability, if it's not one person, it can only be 5. It can't be 20 people for 5 grants. So when it says who is accountable, you have 5 officials, or 1, or 2, or 3, to whom the monthly and quarterly reports lend, and who look into these things, and who liaise with the provinces in terms of the timeousness and the quality of the report. So we would want the focus to be a bit more sharper than really being spread. So, I don't know, Chivant, want to say something?
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. I was just perusing my documents here, as you rightly put it. There was this intention by the Department of Health. I just want to confirm with regards with hospital revitalization that the department was intending to stop transferring funds to Mpumalanga because they were unspent for the last 5 years, last financial year. I just wanted to get an indication. Probably, Chair, maybe they won't be coming back next year for the same reasons, hence I'm asking them now. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, madam, that is the case. But in the analysis, we've also identified other provinces. And in that process, we've prepared a report for Treasury to request that the Treasury reallocates. And part of the reason we're using hospital revitalization, it doesn't mean we're not taking care of other grants there. We are using this experience that we've just gathered in the few weeks to take corrective action for other grants.
Yeah, okay. No, you see, DG, what it does, it personalizes departmental operations. You are new, you have come in, you have new ideas, they are changing. So if you leave, somebody will come with something new. I think that's the frustration here, that we've been sitting with this problem all along. In fact, the initial attitude was, it's not our problem, we've given them money, it's up to them on how they account. I remember that we actually had a meeting with the portfolio committee to say, if you as a department are contesting policy, don't tell us. Go and change it there. So we've had problems with the department in terms of its ability to deal with this issue. So we were watching the space and hoping that we'll be able to see the various changes that are there. How you deal with the challenge we've had that provinces can only be asked to do the right thing but cannot be forced because of the separation of power between the various spheres, I'm not sure, but we'll be watching. And if there's no improvement, we'll come back, sit down, and... Yeah, can we move to the next one, comrades? Comrade Tobijan?
Thanks, Chairperson. I will be leading the sport and recreation South Africa. My focus will be, of course, again on the DORA, but basically the first area being the mass participation grant. I'm sure in a lighter note, I may keep quiet and he can answer everything because the questions are not going to be that much, different it will just be in terms of program, but they are the same. Almost, you know, in principle are the same question. That requires the department. But nonetheless, let's start. Do you have the officials responsible next to you? So that we don't go and look him very far. I guess he must be around you. So that when you said, we did not, it's a negligence, you just, you know, hook the man and start dealing with him right there. Okay. Do you have him next to you?
I was going to suggest this fellow be left with Sepp Blatter. but yes, indeed, I do have.
Thank you very much. You have been transferring monies to both provinces and municipalities. And in most cases, in those transfers, you were not complying with Government Gazette number 3978, which clearly required that subsequent to a transfer, of course, amongst other things, is to have a business plan submitted to you, talking to areas that they wanted you to transfer to them on the basis of that. Our information in our disposal is, if any, I'm sure it was only one, which submitted that to you. Why have you given them money if you don't know what are they going to do with that money?
Just for the purpose of our discussion, to indeed confirm that we have the three grants. Of course, the Honourable Member is zooming in on the mass participation grant, and for reasons clearly because there's been prior year audit findings in relation to that grant. In respect of the other grant, there's not really been any audit findings, but for information. The three grants that we manage as sport and recreation is the 2010 FIFA World Cup Stadium Development Grant. For the year, the current year is 302 million rand that we've transferred to municipalities. In the past financial year, it was 4.3 billion rand. In addition to that, we're also managing the operational grant, the World Cup host city operational grant. This year we transferred 210 million to host cities and in the previous year 508 million. And then the mass participation grant, the one currently under discussion, 426.4 million for the current year. In the previous year we have transferred 293.7 million 2008-2009. The question that the Honourable Member is asking is why we have transferred money without the required business plans. Just again, the finding in that regard is that in respect of eight provinces, they submitted after the due date, which was the 15th, of February of that particular year. And in respect of one province, the Auditor General could not find the business plan that's been submitted. Chairperson, again, similar to my colleague in health, the fact of the matter is that I can assure this committee that no money was transferred to provinces prior to us receiving and signing off on the business plans. The fact that it was late is accepted. We obviously had to pursue them to obtain those business plans. But in all respects, as well as in the case of the host cities transfers, we have not. That the fact that they are non-compliant, of course, in not submitting on time is problematic, because it also means that we are able to transfer also later we need to scrutinize those business plans. So it does impact, I think,
they submitted late and you also transferred late, or you transferred money and then pursued the business plan.
I'm saying we did not transfer before the business plan, so we only transferred after receipt thereof.
Hush. Can you mic, please?
Which province didn't adhere to what they wanted from them? Because the other aid did transfer, did what they wanted them to do.
Honourable Member, Gauteng did submit. The challenge that we've had at the time of the audit was the fact that we could not, their business plan could not be traced. We dealt with that also before at this committee level. We have subsequently obtained the copy from Gauteng. Of course, the dilemma was at the time that it could not be provided to the AG when it was required.
By whom? By your office or even by Gauteng?
By our office.
I wanted us to be clear here, because the DG keeps on saying currently. Are we talking about 2008-09 financial year, which is the focus where I'm sitting on?
Okay. What happened in 2008, the prior year finding of the AG, that's right.
Because that's the area what I wanted to be sure that we are talking one more. You are saying you did not transfer any money before you got the business plan. I'm saying this because it should be on record.
I can confirm that.
I'm sure, Chair, we need to verify that. Maybe we can even check with the AG here now before it becomes too late.
Are we able to get a confirmation that indeed there were late submissions and late payments? Are we able to get a confirmation? Yes, sir.
Honorable Chair, yes, you can confirm what the DG is saying, that is true.
All right.
Thank you, Chairperson, and it's good that that has been confirmed. Let's come back to the issue of monitoring and supervision on this particular grant. You are also DG required by the law to make sure that the monitoring and supervision is continuously, being given to these grants at whatever level you are given to. But we have then been informed that you are not doing exactly that. What are the reasons if you don't have?
Thank you, Chair. Of course, again, Chairperson, I need to say, on the one hand, when it comes to the stadium development grant, and I'm raising this even though I know the question is being asked in general terms, but specifically for the mass participation grant. Just to say, in terms of the stadia development grant, we're very pleased because of the complexity of that project. We've been working very closely with certain institutions, including the Development Bank of South Africa and outside agents such as AREB as well as the SNA. Why I'm saying this is that in respect of that grant, we're quite pleased that they've developed very effective monitoring tools, in fact 10 tools that we've received and reviewed on a monthly basis. And Treasury is also quite pleased that system of monitoring is something that we should use for all mega projects going forward. So there is some best practices there. Of course, our focus, again, in the area where things have not been going that well. With the mass participation grant, it's really been a problem for a number of years, the monitoring and evaluation, because I think, from the start, the problem was in how people have developed the individual plans, whether those plans are aligned to the national outputs that we have captured within the grant framework. I think that was the problem initially, that for a number of years, various provinces have continued to do their own thing, defining their own outputs, some of it aligned to the framework, others not. It's at that point, Chair, that we intervened by partnering with the technical assistance unit to get some specialists in to really achieve in the first instance that alignment, to begin to define the outputs, to try and delineate what different provinces will do in terms of the value for money, the cost, the targets, to capture that within a national data system and for us then to begin to monitor effectively provinces looking back. So we've had that intense work for the whole of last year taking place with the help of the technical assistance unit. And I'm quite pleased that we've seen a product where already the first quarter reports for this year, if I show you the quality of those reports, it is really very satisfying to see how now we're able to monitor specifically against the outputs that's contained in the business plans. Also, not only in terms of the performance information, but also some of the other issues that we need to monitor. For example, in the past years, we've discovered that the reason why the monitoring and the reporting were problematic in provinces is that they simply did not have the staff. So what we've done was to build a provision within the grant framework for provinces to appoint staff using part of this money. In fact, we've told them they can use up to the 6% of the allocation.
Thanks. Chair, I'm worried. I'm not sure whether it's that the question are not clear to the DG or it's a deliberate, you know, avoiding to answer. Because the question I've asked is, in terms of Government Gazette 3978, it requires them that by the 30th of May 2008, they should have been having the monitoring and risk, you know, management plan received from provinces. But by that particular time, they had nothing in their hands. So the answer that is giving is not anywhere related to the question. Can he deal with the specific that I wanted him to deal with? These other things, I'm sure they may be good and reserved for the portfolio committee. I wanted to know what happened with this particular, you know, financial year under review. Thanks.
Well, I can just, again, Honourable Member, sorry if I've missed your question. I can confirm that indeed that is the case, that we've not received the reports by the date that's specified and not in the form. I've acknowledged that, and hence I was trying to rather focus on the corrective measures introduced to avoid the same repetition thereof.
Did you have reasons why they were not there, if you were to?
Chairperson, this is why I'm saying in cases where they were not there, it's really because of poor staffing arrangements.
Not in cases, all the provinces, neither one submitted to you by that particular day.
Can I just ask the manager just to confirm the details thereof? Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Member. My name is Thokozile Mkhonto. And I'll be able to assist the DG in terms of the report. But I need just clarity on the question. You're saying by the 31st of May you had not received monitoring and evaluation reports.
30th of May 2008, as required by the, you know, Government Gazette, you had received nothing from all nine provinces. What were the reasons if you have gone into that particular interest?
Yeah, by the 30th of May, I had received, because you see, we received...
Sorry, can I just interrupt? The funding relates to the sustainability and risk management plans that could not be provided. Sorry.
Okay, now, if it makes sense, on the risk and sustainability plans...
I think the comrade asked the question in that way, right from the beginning.
Okay. Yeah, okay, yeah. I didn't really... fully understand because he started with a business plan. But now on the risk and sustainability plan, you know, each business plan, it has a template. Our business plan was designed by National Treasury.
And in each template, there is a risk and management plan. And we indicated this to the AG, and they were quite satisfied with the response. However, you know, the statement is put in the framework. We put a risk and sustainability plan together. Hence, it read like that. What was actually missing was a sustainability plan from the provinces. And hence the DG's response in saying that we had to ask the technical assistance unit to go and intervene on our behalf and assist us in empowering provinces in developing the sustainability plan. And I'm really quite pleased to actually announce that, you know, provinces were taken through, you know, rigorous training. And we have actually
that, that you can tell Portfolio Committee. I'm saying I wanted to know the reason why they were not there. Couldn't you detect that there is something that is not going well by that particular time? Look, this other planning and whatever, you know where you can, you know, best go and keep. I'm talking about 2008 and 2009. You were happy about the report.
Okay. Let's do this. My listening from her response is that only one part was covered. The other part was not covered, which deals with the sustainability. Now, why was the sustainability part not there? What, in your interaction with provinces, what were the challenges?
The challenge with the sustainability plan was that provinces did not have enough personnel to actually work on the exit strategy.
Thank you, Chairperson. The answer is there. Why then do you transfer money if that is what they have said to you?
Chairperson, yes, we have transferred money, and in retrospect, that's what we are saying is some of the challenges during implementation that we've picked up, and we can only accept responsibility for not having proactively made sure that the staffing issues are dealt with.
I may stop here. I'm not interested anymore.
No. You have interest throughout this meeting. So, in short, money was transferred without all the conditions having been met. Or the sustainability part was not a key requirement for the transference of the money.
The sustainability plan is about an exit strategy, you know, to work towards, of course, the grant becoming part of the actual equitable share of the provinces. So it is a kind of an ongoing towards, you know, medium to long term. I don't think it was a requirement for us prior to transferring the grant.
Okay. All right.
I think the statement is misleading. We cannot leave the first statement, because this condition that we are talking about, it's in terms of the law that I've been referring to. Now to come and say, no, it wasn't a condition. Was it discretionary decision to say, I can? I think the law requires that. That's why we're talking about non-compliance.
The way the question was formulated, Honourable Member, is whether we have transferred the money despite them not having developed the sustainability plans. Indeed, we have transferred the money without such sustainability plans. That was required to be achieved during the course of the year, which they have not complied with.
All right. Mashia.
Raising on the same issue, Chairperson, in terms of sustainability plan, coupled with risk management. What I want to understand is, where is the department now? Are they satisfied that they will be compliant in this coming financial year? My second question is around business plans, because I gather that there must be some sort of approval taking place.
in terms of allocation, when does it take place? Do you get the business plan, then allocate, or do you get the business plan, then approve, and then allocate? Because I think it is very important, Chairperson, that we have a deeper understanding of actually what is going on. Because if we don't do so, we might say because they received a business plan, then it's okay, then they can allocate. But is it actually approved before allocation takes place? I thank you.
And get a response and then think.
Thank you, Honourable Member. With regard to the sustainability plans, I can say because of the fact that there was a finding, we've really zoomed into making sure that we are compliant. And so there's been significant progress in that regard. The risk management plan, Chair, both in terms of the risk management of the conditional grant and the overall risk management within the department, we've also made some significant strides in terms of managing those risks. So I'm quite comfortable with the progress that we're making and the monitoring in that regard. The question specifically regarding business plans, you know, indicative totals are given to provinces in terms of the allocations that they can expect for a particular financial year. In fact, we go further and give it for the entire MTF period because we perceive figures going forward for 3 years. And so provinces are quite clear what they can expect. What they then have to do is to prepare their business plans against the grant framework and according to those indicative allocations that we've given. It's on the basis of that that we then sign agreements with the provinces. So that essentially is the process. We disperse the money on a quarterly basis. Of course, at the beginning of the year, we, in terms of our expenditure plan, we know very clearly what is going to be dispersed in what quarter. We can see the expenditure trends per quarter. If there's any concern, we can intervene appropriately. If under expenditure persists, we can withhold the grants, as we've heard in the previous discussion. Indeed, in one case, I have withheld the grant from Mpumalanga province because of under expenditure. other reasons why we've withheld the grants, again, is to enforce compliance with regard to the timelines for submission of reports. Gauteng and the Western Cape previously also did not comply, and we've withheld the grants. And that's, we've seen people then responding in that particular way. I must add that in the case of Mpumalanga, they've responded so well that when I withheld the grant, they then ended up overspending on that grant. So, of course, it points to a different problem in the province. But generally, that's the system. And then, because it's not only about disbursement of money, it's about engagement with the provinces. We have regular meetings at the level of the implementers, the project managers, and then the project coordinators just to monitor these trends as well.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was just going to pick up on what the DG said. About withholding or permanently stopping. There are only the two instances that you can recall that happened because of non-compliance. Were there reasons to reallocate unspent funds to other provinces, and were any financial misconduct that was discovered in the way funds were dispersed by the provinces? So that's the first question. The second question is the additional funding for the stadia. You told us there was 404.3 billion last year and 302 million. Are you satisfied with the accountability for the use of those funds by the various host cities to which those funds were allocated? And the last question is your mass participation. Is that also geared towards schools? Because I know at one time there was a problem between Department of Education and Sport and Recreation in terms of who does what. And then is that grant also used for schools?
Thank you, Chair. Honourable thing. Of course, within the provinces, I don't have the actual detail of financial misconduct in relation to grant funds, if it may have happened in the particular year under discussion. It's something that I cannot ask for the information. The nature of our business is such that we can never say never, and that they, I think we must just make sure it's something that I will pick up on. Regarding, I have referred earlier to the two instances involving three provinces where we've withheld the grants, in two instances because of not submitting the reports on time, and in the one instance because of not spending according to the agreement. Whether we have subsequently taken money away from provinces and reallocated to others is just detail that now I think I've had some discussions at some point, because it was realized that the Northern Cape always, because of the way in which grants funds are allocated, they're always short, and so we have to add that discussion whether we actually managed to reallocate between them. If I can just ask the project the program manager to confirm.
Keep on pressing the wrong button. Yes, we tried it in 2008, in 2007-8, where we reallocated funds to from Limpopo to the Northern Cape, because Limpopo, you know, they were really battling with expenditure. They were really battling with expenditure. So we had to reallocate $3 million to the province that really needed the money, and they had proper plans in place. And so that really assisted a great deal. And I know Limpopo the following year, they actually wanted the funds back, but it was unfortunately too late.
And the question regarding the...
All right. That was then in the legislature of Limpopo.
It was only in the legislature. I wish it was the HOD. Honourable Chair. No, hard feelings. Honourable Chair, regarding the Stadia development grant, the question whether we're satisfied whether the host cities have accounted in full, it's a very loaded question. Of course, if we go into the detail, you would find that there's not been complete compliance with regard to the grant framework, even though there's been no opinion expressed on it as yet. The biggest challenge that we have is, of course, the over-expenditure on these stadia, the extent of over-expenditure in some of the host cities. And it's a problem that resulted from the fact that contrary to advice that we've given the host cities at the time to go for closed, fixed pricing to build a stadium. In the case of Mbombela and Mangahung, their stadium was built according to the fixed pricing set. In all other instances, it was not fixed, and it led to significant fluctuations. You know, when certain other things happened, such as the prices of steel and cement escalated, and so on. So, yes, indeed, our major concern has been in the over-expenditure of the stadia in respect of the, particularly the six stadia. Of course, we have, through Treasury, negotiated from time to time to top up the allocations to host cities. And then Treasury, of course, at some point really felt this is not the route to go, because whilst for the reasons that I've spelled out, the fixed pricing versus open pricing, there are also other factors that influence expenditure. You know, the basic requirements for the stadium were set. In some cases, people opted for other more frills and so on. So we are saying there must be collective accountability for how the funding for the stadia, the over-expenditure is to be managed. The agreement that we've had with Treasury is that in respect of further underfunding or over-expenditure, that they should access, where possible, loan funding, and there is a facility with the Development Bank of South Africa
to provide loan funding to municipalities, and what Treasury has agreed was to provide for, as part of the allocations, to service that loan for a period of 2 years at least. So the major problem is in the area of funding. The other issue, honourable member, that of course is worrying is the maintenance and sustainability issues around the stadiums, and I'm sure we all share that concern. When we made a decision on which cities would host the tournament, all of them had to make very strong cases, you know, for the stadium, the maintenance, the sustainability, and we had that assessed and analyzed by experts, and on the basis of that, a decision was made as to who the host cities would be. Part of what the grant framework requires is, of course, that we, that I should appraise myself, that the maintenance issues are adequately dealt with on the one hand, and on the other hand, that there are sustainability plans for these stadiums. Work that we currently doing, again, with partners in the Development Bank, just to revisit for us the initial sustainability and maintenance issues that host cities have committed themselves to, and to see what gaps there are and what changes we need to enforce. Of course, there's been a lot of talk publicly about these stadiums becoming white elephants. That is a risk that when we developed these facilities, we wanted to make sure that control to a large extent remain in the hands of our people, the citizens, and that it's accessible. And we know, unfortunately, to maintain these things, to make it profitable, different municipalities as the stadium owner use different models, to outsource the management of these facilities. But we're concerned that access to the federations and the codes may be limited because of cost issues, and so we will be engaging seriously with municipalities on the work that the Development Bank is doing for us. Hopefully that work will be completed by the end of September. Thanks, Jane.
Right. I want us to move on.
Can I have a follow-up?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Chair, thank you very much. The DG did tell us that there was an analysis that was done by experts before the stadia were constructed in terms of sustainability and maintenance. Are there any stadia in the country that stand out as real areas of concern where you find that they may not be sustainable in the medium to long term? And if that is the case, I mean, why in the first instance was money ploughed into development of those stadia?
I'm beginning to gather that I'm giving too much information. Okay,
we need all the information.
Yes, let me not risk making that point. I think it would be unfair to any of the host cities at this point. I have said that I'm asking the experts to do a review for me on the sustainability issues. Let me get that information and engage on the basis of that. Thank you.
Well, just to point out the fact that you were initially indicating that we have plowed billions into those stadiums, public money. Now, if some of them are not going to be sustainable, the question might arise whether it was a fruitful expenditure or not, you know. So that is why indicating where potential challenges exist is in the public interest, to the extent that these are public facilities built with public money. So I would want that we deal with it in that context. Right?
Now, accept that. What I'm saying is that the initial decision on where to build these stadiums, the decision was made built on the models for sustainability and maintenance. And so those were the decisions at the time. Whether it's still valid, that's a question that I have to, answered.
No, that's the question it's asking.
And this is what I'm saying to the Honourable Member. It's the work that's being done currently to assess and review those sustainability plans. And that work is going to be concluded in September.
And God forbid there shouldn't be any adverse finding, because then it might be that those stadia were built on the basis of false pretenses, because sustainability did not mean at the time of the World Cup. I'm sure it had medium to long-term sustainability. Actually, for me, there shouldn't be even any review, but rather looking at implementation, because you had a plan that said
are going to build, after building this, how we're going to use it. We should be saying, is that plan being fully implemented? Yes, Comrade.
No, we have.
Okay. All right. Okay. Now, I think we'll keep that under our radar screen. Because the bladder was here for only a month, but we are here forever.
Yes.
So whatever infrastructure has been... all right. Complete me.
Siyabonga Hlala. I'm dealing with COGTA, Chairperson, and issues are similar, but Chairperson, maybe before I kick off, I think it will assist this committee, because we have engaged this department sometime last year or early this year, and engaging with the annual report, as it were. Chairperson, who am I addressing here now? Oh, thank you. I thought I would address the DG through you, Chairperson. But quickly, Chairperson, one of the issues that we engaged with the department earlier in the year was a serious issue of the vacancy rate in the department of COGTA, which may, in my view, result in the issue of the deficiencies that arose, more especially with regard to DORA. To kick off, Chairperson, then maybe the first question that will be forwarded to the DG, that I'm told that he has now been officially appointed as a DG. Is that correct, sir?
Correct, Honourable Member.
Thank you. With regard to the other vacancies, here you had about 23 of your SMS staff not filled. How far have you fared in that regard? Do you now have a CFO and the other relevant senior management component in your department?
Thank you, Honourable Member. Early in the year, the Ministry Department decided that based on our revised mandate that we are going to re-advertise all SMS posts in the department. That was around about March. So we are currently in the process of interviewing. We've interviewed for all the DDG posts already, and we started in the last week or two interviewing for some of the executive manager, that's the old chief director level post. So I'm saying all of these things to answer you, Honourable Member, by saying that the process is ongoing. The vacancy rate has not gone down yet in general, but our target is within the next 2-3 months that we would have made substantial progress. Thank you.
Through you, Chairperson, 08 or 09, you got a qualified report, and we are reliably told that the minister was very much upset about it, understanding that this department is the custodian. In fact, we have this 2014 clean audit campaign, which is driven by yourself, and surprisingly, you yourself got that, and he told us, rather the deputy minister, that was the reason why in the May, the CFO, his contract was, put it mildly, terminated. But I can see you still have that post vacant. And that was a critical yardstick. In fact, he not to say bluntly, he blamed that to the square, that squarely to the office of the CFO. And you don't have a CFO now. How do you explain it?
Thanks. I think our assessment, part of the reason for the qualified audit, I think there are a number of reasons, but the main reason we believe was poor leadership in that area of the CFO's office. So that is why we definitely believe that the decision to terminate the contract of the CFO was a correct decision. Presently, we have interviewed already. We've had interviews for the CFO position at the DDG level, and the process is currently, the matter is currently being processed before it goes to Cabinet. So I can confirm to the House that we've already had interviews, and the matter is currently being processed.
Thanks, Chairperson. Not good enough. Critical position. Why so long? I mean, we're talking about something that happened over a year ago, and you are saying part of the reason critically was to beef up that very same office. And a year down the line, if not more, that has not been resolved. How serious are you taking this matter?
The previous CFO, I can confirm this and come back, but I think the previous CFO was, the contract was terminated in December or January. I think it was December. So just to correct, it wasn't a year, probably about 6 months or so that this position has been vacant. One of the challenges that we've experienced, and we saw this in the interview process that we've had for this post, is that it is very difficult to get good quality CFOs that want to come, that are prepared to come in at the remuneration of a DDG. Quite a few good people came in and they're earning, you know, packages that are way above, you know, what the civil service. I'm giving that as one explanation why it has taken us so long, because we've also, tried to do a bit of headhunting in the process. But as I'm saying, I'm confirming again, we have had interviews and the matter is currently being processed. Thank you.
Thanks, DG. Through you, Chairperson, one take comfort, though, that I think I heard you saying the offices of the MIG and the MSIG has now been filled with their respective heads. Is that correct?
Honourable Member, those positions have never really been vacant. As part of our overall SMS complement, Senior Management Service complement, we have had, you know, managers responsible for the different grants. I think it is only in one instance, in the instance of the Municipal Systems Improvement Grant, that particular senior manager has left the department. But I can confirm that we have colleagues fully in place. In fact, the colleague sitting directly behind me, Mr. Mukeng, is directly responsible for this grant. That is his, that is his job. And for all the other grants, we've got senior managers in place, and they have been in place for some time. So we have not had capacity problems in that regard.
Thank you, Chairperson. Quickly, just refresh my memory between a difference between the special MIG and just an MIG. I'm saying this in relation to, just to give you an example, in a case of a disaster, for instance, do you use the same criteria when you process the municipal infrastructure grant, or just a special type of a municipal municipal infrastructure grant in the case like a disaster, for instance? Is there any difference whereby you will have to be required by law to receive a proper business plan and applications thereof? Is there any difference?
Honourable Member, I'm not sure I'm completely following you, and if you don't mind, I'd maybe ask you to give some more clarity, but let me attempt to answer you. If we look at the Division of Revenue Act, and I'm not sure I'm answering you, that's why I'm seeking clarity. If you look at the Division of Revenue Act and the framework starting on page 134, going up to 137, the Municipal Infrastructure Grant talks about two types of Municipal Infrastructure Grants. There's the Mixed Cities Grant and then just what is called Municipal Infrastructure Grant. Now, I'm not sure if you're referring to that split. I can see that you're confirming. I can ask again my colleague, Mr. Bolojo, to deal with some of the kind of technicalities, but the Municipal Infrastructure Grant, I'm dealing with the one component now. This component, in fact, what is common? Let me start with what is common. What is common between these two grants is that they are both aimed at providing financial resources to municipalities to assist with basic municipal infrastructure. That is what is common, to deal with backlogs and to get services to our people. The primary difference between the two is that the Municipal Infrastructure Grant, the kind of larger one, provides funding to local municipalities, Category B municipalities, and then I think we can confirm whether some Category C municipalities also get that funding. The Municipal Infrastructure Grant for cities, what is called mixed cities, that goes to your metropolitan municipalities and to some big Category B municipalities. And I think the basic rationale is that while the motivation is the same, they must use money for basic services, the motivation for the mixed cities grants is that the conditions are slightly more relaxed because the basic assumption we are making is that these large metropolitan and municipalities and cities have got the capability to manage these funds more efficiently and effectively. So if I'm answering your question, I'm trying to explain the basic distinction. You mentioned something else, and that is why I was getting confused. You mentioned something about disaster management. There is no dedicated grant for disaster management in this country. That is something that we've been having ongoing discussions with Treasury. But again, of course, once the relevant procedures are followed, when there's a disaster in any part of the country, once a disaster is declared, then obviously Treasury looks at the contingency fund and wherever they look and they try and make funds available. So that is the system how it currently works.
Coming back to the issue, Chairperson, which is a corner of contention here, is an issue of understanding. The understanding here is that you receive this applications with Malale. Can you just give me space? Just move a little bit. I want to see the man I'm talking to. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, no, now I can see it as long as thank you. The understanding here is that you get this a business plan, which comes to the issue here of understanding. I have here the on this annual report 08-09 that the grants that you dispense on that particular year, on the day of the audit, that none of these municipalities used over 20% of their grant. Then we have the information that most of them, they got their money. Another thing, I won't mention your municipality. Say in December 2008, clearly, according to this, they wouldn't have had time to spend their money in December while the audit is up to June the following year. Then the issue here is that how then did that happen? Because you had this business plan, and again it comes to the issue of the, were you giving this money not for fiscal dumping, having checked their business plan, having checked the capacity of the state municipalities to spend the money in question?
Thank you, Honourable Member. Maybe what I should have done, as with my two previous colleagues, DGs, is just to indicate what the three grants are that we're responsible for. The first grant we're responsible for is an unconditional grant, Local Government Equitable Share. That is the largest grant. Then we have two other conditional grants that we manage. The one is the Municipal Systems Improvement Grant. It's about $200 million. That grant is really aimed at building capacity for municipality to undertake, you know, some of its obligations. So that's the Municipal Systems Improvement Grant. And then the last grant that we manage is the Municipal Infrastructure Grant, MIG. Now, to come to the question around underspending, definitely this has been a problem in respect of the two conditional grants. It has been a problem. But I think the general comment I want to make is that we believe we have worked quite religiously according to the payment schedules in terms of DORA. You know, DORA stipulates that at a particular point in time you need to make transfers. We believe we have made those transfers according to those schedules. And we have also obviously looked at people's, at the performance of municipalities. Now, I can say again in general, and Honourable Member, if you don't mind, I'd like you to be a little bit more specific so I can assist you in answering, but the general response to your question is that where we have detected problems with not getting reports from municipalities, we have taken action in that year 2008-9. And that action has taken the form of withholding funds, and also there's been the instance of Treasury working with us to actually stop funds completely. I'm saying we have those details here. Now, I'm trying to...
Can you share with us those details?
Sure.
Not in terms of giving us all that
Absolutely.
Detail, but in terms of forwarding us a copy of all those details.
Yes, Honourable Member, we will, and I will just give the headlines on both those examples. So let me take the first example of the Municipal Systems Improvement Grant, 2008-9. In that year, firstly, we did not stop any funds. So by the end of the financial year, we transferred all of the funds. But in the course of that year, we definitely withheld or we delayed funds to the tune of $16.4 million. It affected 23 municipalities. And that is precisely linked to some of the problems that we experienced around non-submission of reports by the relevant dates and also poor expenditure that the Honourable Member is referring to. So that is one example of how we have withheld funds. But by the end of the year, those matters were corrected and we certainly transferred that. The other example is on the Municipal Infrastructure Grant in that same year, 2008-9. We stopped completely 280 million rand to 53 municipalities in that year. And again, it is linked to all of the reasons that we've explained. So I'm trying to link all of this to the explanation of we don't think we've engaged in the fiscal dumping. We've been working according to payment schedules, and we think we've been taking the appropriate action. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Just to emphasize what you have just said, in a case of MIP fund, you would then be satisfied before you transfer any money that this municipality has a capacity to spend. You would be satisfied going through all the processes that because some of them dealing here with big money here. I'm talking about millions. Hundreds of millions. So you will be satisfied that this municipality has a requisite capacity to spend.
Yes, Honourable Member, I think two parts to the response there. One, again, the assessment is made on the basis of the business plan that is submitted, and that business plan needs to indicate the program management arrangements and capacity that they'll put in place. So that assessment is made up front. So that's the one part of the answer. But I think it is also correct to say that in the course of the year, once that application has been approved and funding has been set aside, that we still find capacity challenges arising in the course of the year. And this is why I think both provinces on the one hand, and also us working in close partnership with the DBSA, we then identify those municipalities that need additional support. And that is why through a program like Sienza Manje, we are able to release and make available additional capacity in the course of the year to deal with those weaknesses that we've detected.
Maybe Chairperson, one is something that we don't knowledgeable or understand fully here. Your explanation here is that you make sure, or you do all the groundwork to make sure that these people have submitted their adequate business plan. You look at it, you are satisfied, and you are also satisfied with the fact that they do have capacity. Just explain this understanding of 2%, 3%, 19% of the MIG funds for that year in question. Because maybe there is a link here which somebody does not understand. Please educate me. Here you are satisfied with all the capacity, like you have alluded to. Here we are sitting with a huge understanding of under 20%. That is the concern. What is it that we don't understand here? Because one municipality was telling me that the reason why they spend 3.3%, which is 6 million, out of 195 million, which they received there on that year in question, is because they received the money in December of that year, and there was no way that they could have spent that money during the 4 or 5 month period in question.
All right. I would want us to round it off. Yeah. Yeah, I want the DG to respond to the question first.
Thank you. I think something that I probably should have explained up front, with the municipal infrastructure grant, and let me be practical with an example. This year, I think the total funds we'll be giving to municipalities is in the range of about 9.9 billion rand. Now, we have always been of the view, and Treasury is in agreement with us, is that we don't necessarily expect this 9.9 billion to be spent in a single financial year. So when they give us a business plan for different projects, we understand that projects go over a particular financial year. So the point I'm trying to make again, Honourable Member, is that when the comment is made, are we not engaging in fiscal dumping? The response from our side is no, because we are working according to a payment schedule that has been agreed by everyone up front, including the municipality. And also, we understand that project will be going over into financial year number 2 and maybe financial year number 3. So we think there's a reasonable plan and consensus amongst everyone that the money will go over a multi-year period. But the other important question that you asked, which is a more difficult one, is why do we still have some of these challenges around underspending? Chairperson, we can give lots of general explanations here, and if you want, I can ask a colleague who manages to come behind me. But I think if I can give just one or two key reasons. One, I think there are instances where business plans are ambitious, if I have to use diplomatic language. We get good business plans prepared by municipality, but when it comes to the implementation, then they're not able to give full effect to that. So that's one possible challenge. The other possible challenge is the actual capacity within municipalities. We definitely know for a fact in rural municipalities, in smaller municipalities, Northern Cape is one example, and you will see it reflected in the figures, that they are not able to attract the necessary engineering and program and project management capacity. And all of that contributes to the ability to expend and to ensure that the money gets used in the way in which we expect it to be used. So those, I would say, are some of the key challenges that lead to poor understanding. Thank you.
This explanation, in my view, should have been explained to the auditors when they did the audit. Here, I'm taking one particular example.
Mick Umdoni, KZN, KwaZulu Natal. They received 195 million. This should have been explained that this 195 million will be used over a period of 5 years. In that respect, then you will be having a time frame. The first year, they will have spent 20 million. Then this understanding is not supposed to be there, because it's based on the figure. There is no time frame here that this money is going to be spent over a period of 3, 4, 5 years, or 10 years for that matter. That is one point. Then hence that 2%, because that 2%, 6 million is 2% of 195. But the question is, therefore, why were they giving 195 in the first place? Why were not given the money that would be able to spend for that year in tranches, if you like? 20 million this year, 42 million the following year, and so forth and so forth. Because what is happening there, at the end of this audit, these people were sitting in their bank account with 190 million unspent. That is understanding. Unspent is sitting in their account. It is accumulating interest for themselves. I mean, how to explain this? This is the things that we wanted to explain, because if I knew that this 195 was given to this municipality in question to be utilized over a period of 5 years, then that underspending of 2% or 3% wouldn't come to my mind.
Okay. All right.
That answer, please.
Yeah? No.
Just to add to this one.
No. She's putting a rider to your question.
Yes.
Not something new. That's why I'm not giving Comrade Roy all. Yeah.
Chairperson, if that is the case, this amount or this municipality shouldn't have been here listed as under expenditure. Now the explanation must be proper on why there has been under expenditure, especially that you're saying it's over a period of time. If that is the case, then why are these amounts here?
And Lota, General assist us as well before I go to the DG.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the specific case that is referred to was one of the cases in KZN that received disaster funding. Now, because of the process that the DG explained in terms of disaster funding, there's legislative processes that must first be complied with, that money was then only transferred at a specific time. So I think that one is an isolated case. However, one should ask the question whether that should be transferred at one tranche. To get the approval is one thing, but one should ask the question, should the full amount be transferred in one tranche? With regard to the other capital projects, I think, first of all, in terms of cash flow management, the payment schedule should be developed in such a way that funds are transferred close to when it's needed, so that the municipality do not sit with funds in its bank account for a year or two or three while the project is ongoing. That's the other important factor. The third one, which maybe Treasury must also give some comment on, is that Treasury embarked on a process in the last financial year to try and determine the amount of unspent funds at municipal level, which have accumulated there over a number of years. First of all, to determine the quantum, and then secondly, to determine a mechanism to get some of those funds transferred back to the National Revenue Fund. So it is indeed a risk at this stage that there's actually funds that are at municipal level which are unspent, because the money is not necessarily spent in a specific 12-month period. So I think those mechanisms does need some kind of refining.
Chairperson, before you answer, coming back to the question, is there different rules for a disaster fund, special disaster funds, or the MIG fund? That is why I posed that question, but we heard about this story, and it's not convincing that this case, it was a disaster fund. The explanation is not forthcoming as to why then this money was given at once, And the second question still then remains, if that is the case, or the understanding, is there different rules for a special disaster fund or a conditional grant in this case? Because if so, it means something went terrible wrong here, and we need to find out what is it that went wrong here.
Yeah, I still want to go back to the Auditor General. Can you respond to this question?
Chairperson, I think, as I've indicated, there is a different mechanism for the disaster funds to get the funds, because it's not in the budget. It must be provided via legislation at the time of the disaster. So when all those processes have been followed, then the money gets made available. And I think what happened in this case is it was made available at a late stage in the financial year in one single lump sum payment. And what we are saying is that maybe what one should consider is, I think maybe due to the nature of the disaster, it's made available in one lump sum, but maybe it should also be considered to make it available in tranche payments, like on a payment schedule going forward, because it's normally of capital nature, it cannot be used within 1 month or 1 month or 3 months.
Is there any business plan for it? Conditioning that grant, it was a disaster fund, as you alluded to, but was there any business plan which talks to the amount in question? Or where that money, 195 million, originate from? Because if there was a business plan, that business plan should have talked to the duration of the project that need to be undertaken and so forth.
All right. Mr. Treasurer, in terms of your process to seek to analyze the unspent funds that are there in municipalities, have we made progress to have a comprehensive information in that regard, or is it still work in progress?
Thanks. We have concluded the process currently. We submitted our findings to our minister for finalization on that, and once that is done, we will be available to come and present all the findings. We're just waiting for the final sign-off, but we do have information. I actually have them here, but I'm just waiting for the final signature from our minister.
All right. Tombi will follow up with you to make sure that we don't lose track of that. But DG, can we come back to the questions that were raised?
No, thank you, Chairperson. If you will allow me, I would like the manager, Mr. Boloko, just to add quickly. But I just want to make two quick points. Firstly, I want to assure the member that when we motivate to National Treasury for disaster funds on behalf of municipalities, it is done on the basis of very, very detailed business plans where they've costed the extent and the nature of the disaster and what needs to be addressed. So that I can definitely give the assurance to the member. I think a second point of clarity that I must just repeat, because I think maybe I was not making the point clearer. When I was explaining earlier that on the one hand, funds are utilized over a multi-year period, I think, honorable members, I was not trying to provide an excuse for under expenditure. I think that is the point I want to make, because we find both scenarios. On the one hand, we definitely find instances where municipalities are underspending, and it has got very little or sometimes nothing to do with the fact that money is given over a multi-year period. So there are cases where there are problems with poor expenditure. But separate to that, it also is the case that money is provided over a multi-year period. So I'm saying I was not trying to make excuses with a multi-year payment for under-expenditure. That's the point I want to make. But maybe if my colleague can just come in quickly with your permission, Chairperson.
All right. Yeah, sure. Quickly.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to add on the issues with regard to the questions that are being put forward. To start with, on the issue of the capacity, we allow municipalities to use 5% with the maximum of 3.5 million to use from their MIG funds to do project management in the municipality. So before the start of financial year, they must send the business plan that shows what type of skills project managers, contract managers, engineers, so that we approve that business plan. So that's why we are able to transfer the money. So that is one thing that we are currently doing at the moment. In the case of Umdoni, what happened is that there were two municipalities that received higher allocation during that year. It was Umdoni and Kokama in Eastern Cape. Now, in the case of Kokama, they had 178 million. So immediately after, we know in December that the Gazette is out that provided the funding for disaster, we contacted National Treasury to say, in the case of Kokama, we are not happy to give that money directly to that municipal primary bank account, because at the time they had cash flow challenges and so on. Then we requested that it be allocated via the district, which is Kakadu. So Treasury approved that, and the money went through Kakadu. So the program went very well. We visited sites and the projects. They are currently a good project. In the case of Umdoni, we requested Treasury to say, we can't gazette, because it was already gazetted as 300 and something million. We said, we can't take this money at once. But Treasury didn't take us on that one. So by end of financial year, because the money, the Umdoni happened to know about that, they have that money in January, and the financial year was going to end in March. Now, immediately after they know that they have the money, they started procurement, consultants, and all those issues. Come towards the end of March, now, as the department, if we had withheld that money, then it would take until, like, another November to get that money to go in. But now, because these are disaster issues, and the municipality has already committed in terms of getting contractors and so on, we felt that if we delay that money at that stage, it would have affected the progress in terms of dealing with this disaster. That's why we didn't have problem in terms of paying the money to the municipality. Now, we visited all the projects in Umdoni. They are very good projects. We visited them, quality infrastructure that has been put with that money. So we are quite confident in terms of what Umdoni did in that regard, Chair. Thank you.
All right. So I think the issue here, DG, going forward, I think it's an accompanying explanation just to give context so that it is not seen as a massive under-expenditure and why that municipality got such a high sum of money. I think with that context, then it becomes clearer what went on.
One thing I said, it should not have been here in the first place, because this credible explanation, I'm saying it should have been explained to the auditors. It should not have found the way even in the book, because if I was the accounting officer responsible for this, I was not going to sign off this annual report, because it means it does not reflect the true picture. This annual report reflects a picture of a department in crisis. I don't know why it was signed off in the first place then, if this explanation is anything to do by, because it should have been explained, though it does not explain why. I do accept the reason explained by the official there, that the money was gazetted and in January they knew about it, but still does not explain why 195, because I can assure you, as we speak now, they have not spent it, that 195 million. I've checked it. They have not spent it to date, as we speak. In fact, they are unable to spend that money in this current financial year.
I forgot to explain the process, MIG process, and the disaster process. The DG correctly puts it to say, currently, when
the issue is not process. The issue is that the explanation you are giving should have been there, so that when we look at the annual report, we don't come to wrong conclusion. I think we should leave it at that. I think it's suffices in terms of our own curiosity as a committee, our concerns in terms of the expenditure patterns and the money that was dispersed.
Thank you, Chair. what I was trying to say is that when this money comes to a municipality, it's part of MIG. You see, because it's part of infrastructure, there's no any other vote where you can allocate it to. So it becomes an additional to their MIG.
Okay.
So it's infrastructure. So when you report it, you will always report it
mm-hmm.
at MIG. But when you go to processes, they all also have to do business plans. But when it comes to disaster, we are flexible because you're talking about something that needs to be urgent and they need to be addressed as soon as possible. But now because it came, the Umdoni allocation is plus minus 20 million. So when you bring this other one, which is disaster, it makes the total. That's why it was recorded there. So maybe we should have just put an explanation to say this was caused by disaster allocation.
All right.
I don't mind, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I want to check comrades want to make an intervention. I know thing. Okay, no, it's fine. We'll start with you, Comrade Shiloh, and then Comrade Ron.
Thank you, Chair. The DG reported when Honorable Mandla was asking that the department has now withheld funds in the last financial year, it was 22 municipalities. I think I heard him right, and now they are 33. I just wanted to get clarity in terms of those municipalities which are under administration, what happens in terms of the transferring of these funds. And I think if it's yes, to check also, doesn't it not hamper service delivery as we're seeing this delivery protest every day? Thank you.
All right. No, let them respond to the question, comrade, and then I'll come to you. DG?
Chairperson, if I can get to the point, and I can obviously give a little bit more detail, but the short answer is that if a municipality is under administration, it does not and should not affect the monies that have been set aside for that municipality and the payment dates and the transfers. So I'm saying it does not affect the fact that certain monies have been allocated to a particular municipality. What it does mean for us, however, it means that we need to be much more vigilant in monitoring how that money are being used, precisely because we know there are certain governance and service delivery challenges there. Thank you.
All right, Comrade Roy.
Thanks. I have one or two short ones. The DG refers to capacity building at municipal level. I think he must concede that capacity building is not working. And I want to have the department's assurance that they are taking capacity building seriously. What measures really are in place? Not the detail, just the broad measures. Because if you look at your annual report, Chair, the situation is getting worse. Now, I'm not too sure what you talk about withholding transfers, which grant you're talking about, because it isn't 23, it's not 25. If you look at your annual report on page 116, when it comes to municipal systems improvement grants, you in this financial year withheld 39, previous year 25. Situation shares getting worse. If you look at my region, Ilembe District Municipality,
KwaZulu-Natal. Oh, okay.
The MEC for Finance has just reported that my municipality, Ndwedwe, has only spent 25% of their capital budget. If you look at your report here, very, very poor municipality of Mapumulo has only spent 55.6% of their municipal infrastructure grant. Chair, if you go there is no infrastructure. No electricity, no water, no roads. They can only spend 55.6% of their budget. Kwadakuza, when it comes to Municipal Systems Improvement Grant, only 13% spent. And that money goes to capacity building, it goes to public participation. It means those things are not happening, therefore at the end of the day, service delivery is not happening. And I want to hear that this department is serious about building people's capacity. I don't hear it. Then I want to think out of the box a little bit. Look again at my Lembe district municipality. The district municipality has a history of spending their funds. Why is it that in the case of Kwadakuza, where they can only spend 13.4% of their funds because they don't have the capacity,
down the road, the district municipality can spend. Is there no provision in the law or whatever that the funds from Kwadukuza and Dwedwe and Matamula, where they can't spend, can be transferred 10 kilometers down the road, where they have a good record of spending the money? So the water supply projects will be spent on, electricity will be spent on, because the district municipality has the capacity. Instead of simply withholding the funds, because at the end of the day, it's our people that are suffering, that are not getting the water, not getting the electricity. And finally, if you look at page 296 of your annual report, you track the expenditure when it comes to municipal grants, but you're not tracking the expenditure when it comes to these equitable share transfers. Are you simply assuming that every cent you send to municipalities is being spent? Because if you look at your annual report under the column percentage spent, there's no indication. So is it simply an assumption on your part that the equitable share is being spent? It's in fact not lying there in bank accounts. Thank you.
All right. You want to talk about Bushbuck Ridge?
No, Chairperson, I don't want to talk specifically about Bushbuck Ridge.
But is it yeah. Following up?
It's a follow up check. Because, Chair, do I need to substantiate? Let me just say, Chair, on the answer provided by the DG to the previous question that I asked, you see, I asked it deliberately because I don't want to talk about Bushbuck Ridge, but in particular, I'm talking about Mpumalanga, where withholding of funds have been made, if you turn to page 120, to the municipalities specifically, which has had challenges in terms of protest, that is Dipaliseng, Thabachweng, Komazi, and Bushbuck Ridge relatively. So, and the response that was held is that this withholding of funds doesn't affect service delivery. And Thabachweng now is now under administration. I know that is one municipality that is under administration. I just wanted to say that when you say that you are vigilant in terms of checking, in terms when you transfer this fund, for these municipalities, you have withheld funds, but in the process, this service delivery protest, which mostly it's because of the MIG grants, because the reasons vary. Some of the reasons for this service delivery protest, it's because funds are not spent correctly in that particular municipality, or it's either there's no development part of it, then people take it to the street. So I just wanted to get a view on that one, a view of the department on those issues. I know the policing is one item that is being attended by the president, but I think we better get it here because the department is here. Thank you.
All right. But the key question is around capacity building. I think maybe let's get a response first before we move to other questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. There have been a number of sub-questions, so we'll try and summarize it. And again, with your permission, if I can ask Mr. Mukeng just to help clarify around the Municipal Systems Improvement Grant and whether we think the situation is getting worse, as was indicated by the Honourable Member. On capacity building, I think we would concede, yes, that our capacity building initiatives have not achieved the intended results. I think we would definitely concede as a broad statement. But at the same time, we would also argue that we have been, there have been instances where our capacity building initiatives have yielded results. And again, we can put that information on the table. But I think what is more important is going forward. So let me just comment, as the member said, what is our broad approach going forward? The broad approach going forward is, Honourable Members, the Local Government Turnaround Strategy. That strategy, amongst other things, is centrally aimed at dealing with capacity problems where they exist across the country.
I think what we need to do through our parliamentary day is an officer who I forgot to introduce earlier, he's now left, Mr. Mukwena, is that we will definitely make copies available to the members. But the other example, if I have to be even a little bit more specific than the local government turnaround strategy, through Operation Clean Audit, we are going to be very hands-on in working with municipalities. You know, we've appointed a national program manager who's sitting behind me. We are meeting quarterly with some provinces, in an organized way throughout the country. We go and visit municipalities in particular. I'm trying to make the point that we are going to be much more hands-on than what has been the case in the past. So I'm saying all of that on the back that we can't see that we've not achieved the intent results. But there are many other examples, Chairperson, that we can also give where we think we've been making progress. You know, some of the work that the GBSA is doing is an example of where we think they are adding to the positive set of examples. On the MSIG, I'm going to ask my colleague to respond with your permission, Chairperson. On the issue, which I think is a correct issue to phrase, the way in which it's phrased, it's the issue of how do we deal with a situation where either where a local municipality is not able to spend funds allocated, but there is demonstrable evidence that the district municipality can. The example, which is not in this particular instance, the example where we have gotten the district municipality to assist was, I think, in the Eastern Cape. Was it Kakadu or was it Eden Municipality, also when it was disaster management funds was made available. We precisely took the decision not to give money to that local municipality, precisely, Honourable Member, because it was under in an intervention. So we gave the money to the district municipality. So I'm saying there are examples and precedents and provision is made for us to make those kinds of decisions. So clearly we are prepared to make those decisions. The last point I want to make quickly, the Honourable Member is also correct. There are no reports from the local government expo share funds that we give to municipalities, precisely because it is an unconditional grant. So in terms of DORA right now, there is no requirement for municipalities to provide those funds. Chairperson, just a quick comment, if you would agree to give my colleague, Mr. Mukeng, to comment on the Municipal Systems Improvement Grant quickly.
Thank you, Chair. The information as in the report was an earlier information as regarding to the withheld municipalities. The most municipalities that are in the report were withheld for a period of 30 days or less, meaning that immediately after we wrote letters sent to the municipalities, they then got their acts together and reported their expenditure on the MSIG. So what the DG was referring to on the 23 municipalities with the 16 million are those municipalities that did not respond on time, and the withhold or delay period of their MSIG was withheld for a period of 90 days and less than 120 days. But within a period of 3 months, especially after National Treasury sent letters that they will be also looking into recovering the unspent conditional grants, they then started to report back all MSIG funding, and as such, transfers were made to those municipalities. So broadly, later in the year after the report was finalized, the MSIG allocation expenditure was cleared.
But Mashiane, Pretoria, Singh, and then Advocate, we close it. Yeah, okay.
Thank you, Chair. My issue is around the lumping together of the MIG and the Disaster Fund. And I'm speaking here to the National Treasury. Isn't it possible to separate the two so that, because in my understanding, disaster fund is money that is allocated as per a disaster that takes place in a particular municipality, therefore meaning the money as soon as it lands in a municipality should be utilized for that purpose, and then that money will be finished within a period of time. Now, if you lump together the MIG fund
and the disaster fund, it therefore means it is not clear to us which money is not getting spent. Maybe there should be a consideration on discussion between the department itself and National Treasury that ring fencing takes place, because it's not every municipality that has a disaster. I mean, Taung, for example, has got that time and again. And you've got to know that you can't have the same situation in Gauteng, for example, in Tswane, as it happens in Taung. Now, I think that advice should go a long way. But, Chairperson, also, the cycle of the municipalities come later than those of national and the provinces. Therefore, meaning, if money is as spent, we should not equate it to the time frames of budget allocations for provinces and national. It says to me, Mr. Africa, that the municipalities themselves maybe don't understand this thing, that their time frames are different from those of provinces and those of national. And why is it that time and time and again, monies which are really expected to be utilized are not utilized for the purposes of improving people's lives? The last one, Chairperson, which is just a comment, is that in terms of your threshold, which is 20%, I don't think it's motivation enough. Take it higher to 50%. Let people see that they're not really doing, because I don't know how many municipalities are hiding below, in between 20% and 50%. Consideration, Mr. Africa, of taking it a bit higher so that we get a clear picture of what is actually happening in the country. Thank you.
Pretorius, for your response, so take them together.
Thank you, Chair. I was partly covered by the reply to Mr. Ainsley's question about the local government equitable share, which appears not to be overseen by anybody. It's just an unconditional grant, so there's no requirement from in terms of DORA to monitor that. But the other two grants, the MIG and the MSIG grants, there's a requirement on the department to monitor and oversee the spending of the municipalities in that respect. Now, the bulk of the money, as far as I understand it, goes in the MIG grant. If I count through all the municipalities in the list in the annual report, there's some 9 municipalities who received money, but who, in cases where it's received money, but the department could not monitor or supervise or account for the spending of that money. 3 in the Eastern Cape, 4 in the Northern Cape, etc., altogether 9. And also in terms of the other grants, we've quite a number more, but let's concentrate on the MIC grant. My question is, what happens, how do you monitor those municipalities where they did not, at the time of compiling annual report, give you the information of how the money was spent? If I can just refer you to page 263, for example. I'm sitting with the Eastern Cape in front of me. Bobby Hans, for one, received 3.8 million, but there's no indication in the report what whether that money was spent and what percentage of the funds were spent. So the question really is, how do you account for that? Do you follow it up after the period? Have they since then complied? And are you happy that everybody is up to date?
Thank you, Chairperson. Again, if you would allow, I want my colleague from MIG maybe just to deal with some of those particular questions. Let me also say, I've just checked informally with my colleagues, the 20% threshold that the Honourable Member is referring to, we're not sure we understand what exactly the Honourable Member is referring to. So if we can just maybe get assisted with that. On the issue of the local government equitable share, I mean, I've already obviously indicated that there is no requirement in the Division of Revenue Act for reports to be provided, but I think it must be noted that probably the instrument that can and should be used to monitor that is the annual financial statements of a municipality, because that provides the overall breakdown of how they've utilized funds in its totality that they have at them, they're disposable. But again, let me re-emphasize, the current constitutional makeup, the current intergovernmental fiscal regime makes it very clear that unconditional funds are exactly that. They're given unconditionally,
and that particular sphere of government has the complete discretion to manage funds in a way which they deem fit, and they will need to account for it. So that's my understanding of that. The other difficult issue that the Honourable Member raised of, and again, maybe Treasury would want to come in here via you, Chairperson, the issue of different financial years and whether that impacts on under expenditure. I think what that means for us as officials and how we report to Parliament, I think definitely we need to be as clear as possible in reporting, because I do agree that there is the danger and the risk of unfairly reporting expenditure. So I think we can take that. But again, if my colleagues come in, I think we have tried to take care in doing that. But again, I think if there are other specific ways that we can improve this, we would take those recommendations. So Chairperson, on MIG, there were specific questions on MIG. If you don't mind, I'd ask Mr. Boloko to come in via you. Thanks.
Thank you, Kiji. In terms of the MIG, what happened is that this year we agreed with National Treasury that we are no longer going to transfer MIG from April. We will transfer it from July to March. So for us as national department, we use national financial year, which starts from April to March. So the question comes back again to say, when you come to end of March, and you realize that this municipality has still a lot of balance that is not yet spent, what do you do at that stage? When you engage them, they say, no, but in the next 3 months, we'll spend it, put the money to our account. Then those are some of the issues that we're currently grappling with. In the case of Bavians had a challenge of a project which was going through the heritage site. It was like a pipeline that was going to a town called Sterryville in Bavians. So that had affected them on a serious note. From time to time, we were working on condition that when this approval is sought, then the municipality will move. And that matter had to involve MECs and so on. But to date, that matter has been resolved. And the money that they had, like unspent that time, it's all gone. It's spent already. So there are those issues that you deal with from time to time. But obviously the issue of financial years as it was raised, I think it's a little bit of a challenge, but we will find a way of dealing with it. Thank you.
Hello?
Yeah. I was speaking in terms of the under expenditure threshold that you've put, Mr. Africa. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the threshold, how we manage these grants on monthly basis, because the DORA says if transfers made in the previous month are not spent, then they must be withholding for 30 days from our part. And if that keeps on happening, we request Treasury to extend it to 120 days. So in the case of MIG, 60% is our threshold. I'm going to come to that one. Yeah. 60% is our threshold. So if we transfer 100 million, we say if you don't spend 60%, then we are going to withhold, we're going to delay your transfer. And we do that every month. But in terms of the 20% that the Honorable Member is raising, is the issue when we were considering how to stop the allocation, and it comes back to the point that I raised, to say, when you come to the end of financial year, and the municipality says, this money that I have, I'm going to spend it by end of June. And you say, if you transfer that money, you will then have to dump the money to the municipality.
Excuse me, you're still off tangent.
No. Let him explain. Maybe just zoom into.
Zoom into,
yeah.
When we were considering stopping, we then have to agree that we will stop money for municipalities that were spending less than 20%, so that we can give that room so that in the next 3 months they can improve. And that has proven over the years. So I don't know, maybe there's other thresholds that I may not be aware of. But in this case, that's how we consider stopping and withholding.
10%, can you up it a bit? Because then that encourages municipalities to work a little harder.
We'll do that.
I'm sure you will consider that. Because if you say you'll do that, you're committing yourself that you'll up it to 50%. Well, that's better bureaucratic language. It will be considered.
Chairperson, thank you very much.
Second, Chairperson, I had spoken to the issue of the disaster fund vis-a-vis the MIG fund. Or should I take it that it's a point noted and it will be discussed between the department and National Treasurer? Can I leave it at that?
Let me hear from National Treasurer. Do you have something to say around that?
Thank you, Chair. I think we do agree broadly, and I think Mr. Africa mentioned briefly the issue with respect to putting together that initially those funds would be put in MIG simply because it was related to municipal infrastructure, and also because sometimes, especially if there was a flood, for example, that destroyed infrastructure, the infrastructure that was destroyed was sometimes infrastructure that was built using MIG funding, like in a prior year or something like that. So initially that's why we did it that way. But we do agree that it has caused problems and that we need to work on a vehicle to actually target disasters better. So broadly we do agree on that one.
Right, and let's listen and the advocate.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to follow on colleague Ainsley there where he said think out of the box. And he used the district as an example that can actually deliver services as against a municipality. Now, something for the department to think about, is there really need for districts, or should that capacity not be put within municipalities? I know. We need municipalities, but do we need districts? My question, though...
Please allow him to...
Because there's a lot of capacity within districts. And that's the point I'm making. So it's just something for the department to think about and the portfolio committee. But my general question, which is going to be specific, the DG spoke about systems for monitoring and evaluation. Now, the concern I have is sometimes this just becomes a paper exercise. You look at payment schedules, you look at those kinds of things, you pay. It's not a physical inspection. You mentioned one example where you went to a municipality, and I think this was because of questions that were raised here in Parliament, that you visited that particular municipality to see what they were doing. But does this not just become a paper exercise? We transfer money, we do this. Because, Chair, I'll tell you, there was a municipality where conditional grant, a mayor, they were supposed to build a clinic. The mayor utilized funds there, all the bricks and the cement and everything else, to put an outbuilding for himself. And it is the Office of the Auditor General, when they went out and they checked where this materials were delivered, they found that it was delivered to the mayor's house and something was built, and there was no clinic or no nothing that was built. So I'm just asking if it's just not a paper exercise. And my last question, Chair, is last week I visited three municipalities in Mpumalanga, and there was 100%, I can give them 100%, because three out of three didn't have municipal managers. Two out of three didn't have CFOs. They either suspended or recently fired. Now, what is the state of play of municipalities around the country? Because we talk about accountability. And if you talk about accountability, there's got to be warm bodies that you hold accountable. And if municipalities don't have MMs, they don't have CFOs, and they have administrators, I mean, where does accountability start? Where does it end? So I think we need to know at some stage in writing how many municipalities are affected in the country where they don't have senior staff in office at the moment, who are either suspended for whatever reasons or there's inquiries and things like that, because I think that is the root cause of the problem. Thanks, Chair.
I think the question I have is a question that maybe National Treasury and also the departments that are here really must deal with. The money, this conditional grant and in the primary bank account of the municipality that are ring-fenced in any manner whatsoever, and are susceptible to use for any other purpose other than what they're meant for. I would like to hear from the department, are there no instances where these monies were used
for something other than what the money was meant for. And that's what Tashara, don't you find a problem with this, that this money get mingled with the equitable share of the municipality?
All right. Thanks, comrades. That was the last question. Can we respond to that, and then National Treasurer can also make it?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. The question around whether we need districts, I'm wondering whether that's a compliance question or not. I'm kidding. No, but I think seriously, Chairperson, the department has undertaken a policy review on local government, and I can assure the member, and I'm not going to go beyond what I'm saying now, unfortunately, but I can assure the member that the issue of the role and future of provinces is coming under severe spotlight. I'm not provinces, sorry, district municipalities. Sure, that's a serious blunder, eh? No, but I'm really saying districts, because we seriously believe that there are many examples where districts are not doing what they're meant to be doing. So Chairperson, if you want us to come at another occasion to share some of those observations and so on, we can do that. But unfortunately, the process of taking these policy recommendations forward, it is something that we're still dealing with in the department and within the ministry. But the point I'm making is that we concur that there are problems with the way in which districts are performing their work. That's what I'm agreeing with up front. Chairperson, on the next issue on systems for monitoring and whether it's a paper exercise and so on, again, I can ask my colleague to kind of come in with some of the details. But certainly, we have taken a view some time ago as a department that we need to go beyond just looking at the paperwork that we get. So my colleague sitting behind me here and the colleagues that work with him, we regularly go to provinces. We have meetings with provinces. We have meetings with problematic municipalities, and we go there to inspect these kind of projects. Obviously, you can always do more. We know that. But I can assure the member that we definitely don't just deal with the paperwork that we get. But again, if you want my colleague to come in and explain exactly how we do some of those things, I think he can explain that. The third issue on vacancies, I don't have that report with me, and this is something we can definitely give to the committee. We, on a quarterly basis, we do an assessment of vacancy rates across municipalities for municipal managers, CFOs, and what we call Section 57 managers. Those are the top managers. The last report that I saw, I can just remember the one statistic, for municipal managers across the country, I think the vacancy rate stands at about 12%, 12% nationally. Is that good? Is that bad? We are told that if you look at the corporate world, if you look at organizations generally, we are told that the norm in any organization at any one point in time is between 10 and 15%, because the process is of natural attrition and so on and so forth. Of course, our view is that we really need to try and improve that situation. I think the situation around CFOs could be slightly worse. It could be about 13-14%, but again, I can come back with those statistics. So, as I said earlier, I see Mr. Mokwena is back now when I referred to him earlier. We can definitely make available through him, Chairperson, that particular report, the last quarterly report on that issue. On the issue of grants not being ring-fenced and the need to the issue of the primary bank accounts and whether the monies are being used for other purposes. We are definitely aware of instances. Let me start at the tail end. We are definitely aware of instances where monies are being used for purposes other than what they were intended. The MIG is a classic example. My colleague was explaining to me that we know of instances where this MIG is used for operational expenditure. When we detect that, we engage with the municipality, and in most instances, I mean, again, we can deal with the detail,
the municipalities agreed that they would rectify the situation. That's what I'm being informed by my colleague here. But the issue of ring fencing of funds and the primary bank accounts, that's an issue that Treasury is the custodian for, you know, financial systems and financial norms and so on. It is a discussion we've been having with them. But again, Chairperson, I'm sure that if you will allow me, maybe they'd want to comment on that one. Thanks.
Okay. Let's rather have a comment from National Treasurer.
Okay, thanks, Chair. I'll just start from maybe quoting MFMA, Municipal Finance Management Act. Section 8 provides for the municipality to decide on an account which will be treated as a primary bank account. The section says that all transfers from national government and other spheres of government must be transferred into that particular bank account. Now, the section further says the municipality can have other bank accounts, but we've got to use, in terms of transfers, we've got to use that particular primary bank account. This is primarily for purposes of ensuring monitoring of the funding flow. We want to know as Treasury in terms of how much and where are we transferring these funds to, so that we can be able to hold accountable the particular official. I think the point raised that it causes confusion, I think we are quite aware of that. Hence, the last time when we were here, we have explained to this committee that Treasury has embarked on the new municipal budget reforms that will undertake to monitor the budget of the municipality even at the preparation phase, to even provide comments on how they table their budget, such that whatever that is included in their budget is linked to the transfers that are coming their way and the possibility of what they will raise in terms of their own coffers. But I think the position of Treasury, and which is in line with DORA and the MFMA, is that primary bank account will assist us to be able to follow where this money is going, unlike having too many bank accounts where different transfers are transferred.
All right. You want to make an addition?
Thank you, Chair. I think it's also important to point out, particularly given that there is a corresponding requirement also in the PFMA Section 22 with respect to primary bank accounts of provinces, that indeed the feedback from provincial accountants general and financial managers is that that stipulation actually is not what influences whether or not funds get properly ring-fenced. And in fact, even if you were to say money can go into different bank accounts, that by itself will not actually solve the ring-fencing, because in terms of the existing systems, it's not so much a bank account issue. People can ring fence money without having it, without having to change that particular requirement in the law. Because there's a requirement why we say that the money has to be in the primary bank account. In addition to what my colleague has said, it's also good cash management as well with respect to what's coming from government. Thank you.
All right. Yeah. One last addition.
Okay, I just want to clarify on the visit and the monitoring system. We from time to time conduct site visits where we can spend maybe 3 days in a municipality trying to see what they have done with the money that was transferred. We just finalized the one in OR Tambo, which we are now finalizing the report to the minister. And we did another one in Kondo, in Mpumalanga, recently. So we, from time to time, do that. But due to capacity issues in the department and also the number of projects that we have to do, currently we have more than 20,000 projects in terms of MIG. So that obviously require a lot of intervention. So what we did, we felt that because these funds are spent by municipalities for respective sectors, like sports and recreation, water and sanitation. So we feel that sectors have got now more role to play in terms of looking at whether what we have spent on the money, did we get the quality in terms of what, according to their regulatory standards. So we have now put in the current division of revenue framework, the role of sector department. I believe the Auditor General is going to look at that with the sector departments to check if they are doing that. Because we are saying sectors must then visit and check the quality of the projects in their respective sectors, because they know the quality, know-how in terms of what needs to be implemented for that. And we also put the role of provinces to say they must do this work. So our aim is to say by next year, we should be saying no project gets implemented and completed and we didn't visit it and we don't know the site and over and all those issues. So those are some of the issues that we are now focusing on, trying to improve in terms of getting value for money. And I think that one, we need to do it. Now, the question of the ring fencing, as Treasury puts it, the challenge with the ring fencing is that the AG is raising the question of saying, how can we monitor whether this money that you have transferred, is it there in the bank account? Now, I think that's where the challenge is. Because all these funds come into one bank account, it's very difficult to monitor. But if you have a separate account for capital grants, then I think it can be easier and simple for the AG to monitor. At the moment, some of the funds that we are saying, they are not spent. They may not be in the municipal bank account. But how do you then start verifying? Because this is the account where everything comes in. I think it's something that needs to be reviewed. I think it can take us a long way. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, comrades. Auditor General's Office, as well as National Treasury and the officials. I'm sure that the areas of concern that members have raised have been properly captured. The main issue is accountability. Where funds are transferred, there has to be systems, mechanisms in place to ensure that there is proper accountability. And beyond the conceptual frameworks that are there on paper, practically, literally, can we say these things are working or not? And that's our area of concern. And so far, DORA has been a challenge. And you are the departments that in the main are involved in these transfers. And it is you who should assist us in ensuring that these grants are given and accounted for. So as they are called conditional grants, there are conditions. Are these conditions met? You have your role to play as the people who disperse the money, in as much as provinces and municipalities have their own role to play. But you, the people who give the money, have a much, much more important role to play. And it might as well be that it is not the DG who directly follows on this issue, but some DDG or chief director or whatever. We need to make sure that people can account for the tax that they've been given, for which they're being paid. I think that's the most important thing, and I think that's the most important message that we are sending across. Because these are not new, so let's not deal with them as if they're new issues. They're old issues, and they're old enough to have worried us to have this engagement. Say, no, it cannot be. It cannot be business as usual. There has to be, a line must be drawn in the sand somehow that this has to stop. So we will be taking you on your word, and we'll be looking at the subsequent outcomes. But in the meantime, it might as well be that, you know, monies are being wasted. I don't want to talk about my municipality where there's a fight currently in one area where the road is being tarred. The mayor came there to announce that instead of it being this wide, it is now going to be this wide. We know what the reasons for that are. Cutting costs so that money can go into some other people's pockets. So if there's no proper monitoring, you'll get the tar road from Tramash to Mkuru. But between Role and Cunningmore, you just have a skorokoro of a tar route, you know. So monitoring is very important to ensure that
services are there, but equally that they are qualitative and there's value for money. So we really want to thank you. Mr. Fego, congratulations. I wasn't aware that you are now the Makulubas in the department. All of the best. Thank you very much. Convince, we will need 10 minutes for discussion.